Hey folks, Shag here. Just want to share a few quick thoughts. You know, we are moving along at top speed, and we've only got about 1 year left of episodes in this podcast series. And it's been an amazing journey, but you know, eventually everything must come to an end. And I know you love these JLI comics, which is why you listen. So please know that these older episodes will always be here for you to re-listen. However, if you've also enjoyed listening to me, and I hope maybe you have, I'd ask you please consider subscribing to a couple of my other podcast projects. This way, when the JLI show ends, we can stay in touch and continue to share our fandoms. I have a podcast called Once Upon a Geek, and this is a podcast that lets me celebrate anything that brings me joy. And the show's been going for about a year and a half now, and we've already covered topics like Marvel's What If, and Alpha Flight, and even Battlestar Galactica comic book adaptations. And from DC, we've discussed things like Blue Devil and the Brave and the Bold comics. And from TV, we've discussed things like Doctor Who and the 1980s sci-fi phenomena entitled V. And I've also recorded some episodes chatting with my real-life brother and real-life sister and my daughter. And all these were discussing what it's like to be a geek in this world. So the topics always change, but I can promise you it will be geeky and it will be full of joy. Another of my podcast projects you might enjoy is the Justice Society Presents podcast. Now, this is an anthology podcast celebrating comics and the characters associated with the Golden Age of comics, Earth 2, the JSA, and everything else along those lines. Now, as of right now, there's not a lot of new content on that feed, but once we finish the JLI podcast next summer, I'll be covering many beloved JSA comics there. You're going to get coverage monthly beginning next summer. So, if you subscribe now to Once Upon a Geek and Justice Society Presents, you'll get all the new episodes as they're released. Thank you for the consideration, because, you know, once JLI Podcast ends next summer, I really want to stay in touch with all of you in this amazing podcast community. So, with that, let's get on with the show. This episode, Justice League America number 55 and Justice League Europe number 31, cover dated October 1991. Breakdowns, Part 5 and 6. Hello, and welcome to the 55th episode of Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. My name is the Iridium Shag, and I'm your host, but I'm not flying solo, folks. Every single episode, we feature two different guests. Now, we'll chat with my second co-host a little bit later, but for now, my first guest opened an online store back in the year 2007, right? And the whole effort of this was to try and sell his 9 boxes of comic books. 6 years later, he closes the store, finding himself now owning 15 boxes of comics, thanks to the podcast he was listening to. And as I look deeper, it seems this guest has almost no podcasting experience at all. In fact, we suspect that he stole a microphone from the Fire and Water Podcast Museum and traveled back in time just to join us. Folks, please help me welcome Mr. Devin Clancy. Welcome to the New York Embassy, Devin. Thanks for stealing the microphone so you could be here. How you doing, man?
There's no evidence here, at least in this time, that I stole that microphone, so I don't appreciate the accusation.
We've got that floating droid right next to you named Skeets. I mean, that seems like a dead giveaway.
He's just here. He's helping, and maybe we won't see him for a while, and he'll suddenly come back. I don't know.
That would never happen. Well, how you doing, man? I'm glad to be podcasting with you again.
Yeah, pretty good. I managed to catch up on all of the JLI podcasts. I had gotten stuck on the Huntress special for some reason, and I had to catch up in the last, 5 weeks as I realized I was going to talk to you about issue 55. So I've been listening to you a lot, and it's been, it's been exactly how I expected it to be.
I don't know how to take that, but I will say you need to find better things to do with your time and your ear, sir.
Yes, I think I do.
Normally I would tell people that they don't have to listen to all the episodes in order to stay caught up, but with breakdowns, you kind of do. It is one big contiguous story. So yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge. Now, here we're talking about comics that are 30 years old, but Devin, we've got to talk about some news that just broke, at least at the time of this recording, some news that just broke. We have a Guy Gardner that's been cast in live action for Superman Legacy. Who is it, Devin?
Nathan Fillion, that guy from that one show.
Right, that guy from that one show who's been Hal Jordan before, in audio at least multiple times, and is now Guy Gardner. That's crazy. I have opinions on this. Where do you fall on this?
Well, I feel like it sounds a little weird when you say that I really like Guy Gardner, so I'm not going to exactly say that, but I do really like reading about Guy Gardner, and so the idea of in a movie sounds really cool, and I think Nathan Fillion is not my first choice or any choice that would occur to me, but I'm sure he can do it, as long as he's got the haircut. So I think it could be good, but I haven't really paid much attention to the Superman Legacy movie because I'm sure it'll be canceled at some point. We'll never see it, so.
Ouch! I think the movie will happen. I just don't know if it's going to be a Superman movie based on all the characters they keep announcing. So for me, I got to like, and I know I'm going to regret putting this down in audio form to someone throw it back in my face in a couple years. But like, first of all, I do feel like Nathan Fillion as an older Guy Gardner, that's like inspired casting. He has the absolute right amount of snark, his delivery. I mean, he is going to be a brilliant Guy Gardner. However, and this is the part that's going to bite me in the butt, I know it is, but I just don't like the idea of Guy Gardner being older than Superman. Like, I feel like Superman should be established and be around for a long time before you get someone like Gardner in the game. Because I feel like Guy Gardner, his attitude is like a reaction to Superman's like perfect, you know, heroic, true blue kind of self. That's why I think Guy Gardner works as a reaction to the perfect hero. And that's just my knee-jerk reaction today. And again, I'm sure someone's going to throw it in my face in a couple years and be like, no, he was perfect or whatever. But I don't know. Again, I'm sure they know what they're doing, but that part doesn't sit well with me. I'd rather Superman be around rather than be, you know, still in the early years of his career.
Yeah, I could see if, you know, they're starting a whole new universe and they're like, well, Guy Gardner is a hero and people are like, oh, he saves us, but he's kind of a jerk. I guess that's the best we can do. And then Superman comes along and shows them, you know, a better way. That could be kind of cool.
See, now there's a script that would work right there. Yeah. So, well done. You have saved James Gunn's movie. Congratulations. They don't need all those scriptwriters. They just need Devin Clancy.
Sure. I'm happy to help.
Second career. Didn't even know you had it. Perfect. Now, before we get too much further, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of the JLI Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, we pick a collected edition to discuss briefly from the InStockTrades library. It's, you know, it's tied into the episode or discussion in some way, shape, or form. I picked Art of the Boys Complete Covers Hardcover. So this is, as it sounds, like a complete collection of the covers from The Boys by, obviously, artist Derek Robertson, who is responsible for our Justice League Europe issue this time around. Also, he is credited as writer in this book as well, so I don't know if there's commentary. I haven't seen this book myself, but it has got tons and tons of covers from The Boys. It is 208 pages, full color, hardcover, so if you love The Boys, and you know those covers are, as they put, fantastically controversial is the best way to put it for the covers for The Boys.
Absolutely.
This also includes all kinds of variant covers by Jim Lee and Dave Gibbons and Howard Chaykin and David Lloyd. So there's all kinds of awesome stuff. And there's an afterword by the producer, Adam Kay. So a great, great collection by Dynamite. You can get this for normally $39.99, but you get it for 30% off. So it's only $27.99 for 208 pages of awesome Boys artwork. That's really cool. That's a great collection. And again, Derek Robertson just makes those Justice League Europe issues sing. He's so good. So I got to ask you, Devin, all the cool kids tend to bring something? I know I'm a little on the fence with you being new to podcasting. Did you happen to bring something?
I mean, I'm not an animal. Like, I know how this works. So, yeah.
Okay. What do you got?
I got Super Friends Saturday Morning Comics Volume 2 hardcover, reprinting Super Friends from the 1970s and 80s, numbers 27 to 47, plus material from Super Friends Special Number 1 and Super Friends Truth, Justice, and Peace. Which those last two things, I don't know what they are because that other podcast hasn't gotten there yet.
Well, is the special, is that just a treasury maybe?
It could be, yeah. I don't know. I thought that came before the series, but, you know, again,
maybe so.
I'm kind of forgetting things. But
I don't listen to Rob anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you may not know, but I was actually on that show covering one of these issues. So, you know,
seriously?
When I'm on a podcast, I like to sort of support, you know, the guy I'm podcasting with and not, you know, pretend to insult him the way some people do. So,
you know,
I'm trying to get people to pay attention to him as well.
Wow. I feel like I just got stabbed in the back.
Well, you know, you reap what you sow. Anyway, it also contains Super Friends number 45, which has the Global Guardians in it, and Queen Bee. Well, the other Queen Bee, the pre-crisis Queen Bee. Totally not the same character in any way.
No.
Except she kind of does mind control, but yeah. But anyway, they're all in there, and he's going to cover that soon, actually, in a couple months, I think. So you can look forward to that and be all ready if you buy this book, which is normally $69.99, but in stock trades price is $34.99. You save 50%. Can you believe that?
That's a great deal.
Yeah. Well, so check it out.
Fantastic. And yeah, I didn't realize the Queen Bee had tackled with the Global Guardians before, at least that version. So that's really cool. Obviously, Keith Giffen probably knew that, and I'm sure that was part of his impetus in this, but that's really cool.
Well, it's weird. She's on like a couple pages, and they don't really fight each other. So.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. But they're both in it, so we got that going for it.
I'm looking forward to the coverage on that. So, folks, for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. And by the way, if it wasn't obvious, what we're talking about is the For All Mankind podcast, the Super Friends podcast, done by my podcasting life mate, Rob Kelly, who I tease endlessly. He's not listening to this anyway. I don't know why I'm bothering to say anything nice about him. He produces a hell of a great show over there, so you should definitely be checking out For All Mankind.
On that last Who's Who episode, you guys were just like, you know, having a love fest, so I don't think anyone believes that whole scenario.
I do feel a little betrayed, though, now that I know you've podcasted with somebody else. I knew you podcasted with me for V, and that was your first podcast ever, if I recall correctly.
Well, there's evidence that Rob listened to V because he invited me on after that.
Jeez, okay. Well, I just feel like you've been two-timing me. So, anyway. Yeah. Folks, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the network with so many shows, you know, it requires a lot of online hosting and their service fees and all these things. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the JLI podcast or other shows on the network, the best way to support us is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW podcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the network. And at certain tiers, you get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks who asked to be recognized on the JLI podcast. So our thanks go out to Bill Beer, Chris Lewis, Chris Pine, David Ace Gutierrez, DC Dave, George Van Note, Gord Tolton, John Coos, Kevin Wetter, Mark Baker Wright, Martin Gray, Matt Ev, Maxwell Traver, Michael Crouch, Mike Zumkowski, Roger Preeb, Rudy Castillo, Sean Ross, Superman Radio Revisited Podcast, Symbol Pending, and Tim Price.
I'm going to need you to redo that again because you did it alphabetical by first name, which is stupid. So please resort the list. Alphabetical by last name like a normal person. All right. Just do a take two or something and you can edit it later. I don't know.
Blame it on Patreon. When I export the list, it does it by first name. So I just drop it in Excel. I don't have time to do text to column and split it all apart and all that. That's not happening.
Well, you just do 4 hours of podcasting a month or a week or whatever it is. I mean, I think you got time.
I spend enough time doing Excel at work. So, and then by the way, after thanking all those folks, I do need to thank two other weirdos. So special thanks to someone named Devin Clancy and someone named Doug Adamson.
Yeah, I paid to be here. This is embarrassing and a really bad financial decision.
Oh, the way you spend your money is definitely questionable. So, folks,
I mean, when's the profit sharing coming? It's been years.
Watch for the annual shareholders report. Yeah, that'll come soon, I'm sure.
I mean, you did send me a t-shirt, so I got that going for me.
Folks, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. And seriously, thank you to all of our Patreons for the support, even Devin and Doug. So
you're welcome.
All right, folks, we need you to be part of the discussion because, boy, we got a lot to talk about this month. Please get it on the social medias. Tag us at JLI Podcast because, as I always say, it is about building a community of online JLI fans around the show. And I think we need your help to temper some of the things we're going to say this month. So get out there, share your thoughts. Of course, go out to our website, which is finerwaterpodcast.com/JLI. There, share your thoughts. So that's usually where most of the conversation is going on, is on the website. Definitely want you guys to be part of the conversation. Speaking of making people part of the conversation, Devin, what is your personal origin story with the JLI? How'd you find the team? What made you fall in love?
So I'm just going to pick up seamlessly from our last discussion. I was subscribing to the V comic book, which we talked about, and it got canceled.
That was on the Once Upon a Geek podcast, by the way.
Yes. So it got canceled, and they sent me a postcard or something saying I had to choose another book. And by this time, I learned that when you go to the comic book store, you see an issue on the stands. But if you're subscribed to it, you're not going to actually get it for about 3 weeks. So I had to pick something that I wanted to read, but I didn't have to read right away when I saw it. So I had been dabbling in some other comics, and I picked up Justice League of America, number 250, because it had the Super Friends or the Real League or whatever on the cover. And so I read that.
Ouch.
I actually liked it. Sorry. I actually liked that. And Batman was going to be back. So I'm like, yeah, I could continue to read this. So I switched my subscription. I started with 253 and really enjoyed it and went back and caught a lot of the back issues and was all the way I think I had it running through like number 259 coming in the mail. And so at this time, as a 12-year-old comic reader does, I was just learning everything I could and absorbing everything about the DC universe. I've been picking up Booster Gold, Green Lantern Corps, Man of Steel, Secret Origins, Who's Who. So I was just like absorbing all this knowledge. And so when they announced Legends, I was like, yes, I'm doing that. I'm getting almost all of them, except Warlord for some reason.
way to half-ass it there, Devin.
Yes. Like Cosmic Woman miniseries, of course. Yes, I'll definitely get that. Warlord, who?
I'm drawing at the line of the guy in the feathered cap. That's just not doing it.
Yeah. So I was totally ready for Justice League number one because, like, I had seen all the characters. I knew a lot of their backstories. I was looking at the cover and it's just like, yeah, I knew every single one of those from one place or another. So I was like, I was totally ready. And I had been paying attention to the DC hype machine and how they were talking about the new league. So, I mean, I didn't know it was going to be funny. But by the time One Punch and Moving Day came along, like, I was totally sold on the book and ready to follow it anywhere. So it's the perfect mix of humor, character development, and, you know, every so often there's some superhero action or whatever. But, you know, it's definitely for me, and this is what I think of as my Justice League and how it should be. And I pretty much followed everything in the DC universe from then to about, like, 1992 or so when I ran out of money in college.
Sure. I get that.
I even like Millennium. I'm saying it right here. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I bought all those ones too, probably.
Oof, where someone's going to use that against you in a court of law.
Yeah, sure.
I just want to compliment Devin. I mean, okay, so this is his, what, third podcast? The dude's a pro. The dude is a pro. Because what you guys don't know, in editing, he just described reading those early issues of Justice League, and he mentioned One Punch. And he purposely left a pause afterwards, knowing I was going to have to put that stupid sound effect in there, which I never should have agreed to 7 years ago because it's a pain in editing. But thank you for the pause, Devin. You're a pro.
I told you I'm not some kind of animal. Like, I didn't just come in off. Well, I mean, I just came on off the street to this podcast, yes, but I didn't just come off the street to, like, regular life. So I can do it.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate podcasting with a pro, because the back half of this episode, maybe not so much. Oh, Doug felt that burn. He did. I'm telling you, he did. All right, folks. So head on over to our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com, where you're going to see a gallery post of some of the images from this issue. And I apologize in advance that you have to see those images, as we'll explain in just a few minutes. We are covering Justice League America number 55 from DC Comics, cover date October 1991, on the shelves August 20th, 1991. Cover price is $1 for shiny quarters. Cover is by Chris Sprouse and Bruce Patterson. Don't believe what's in the letters page, because yes, it is covered by Chris Sprouse and Bruce Patterson. You want to describe the cover for us?
Sure. We have at the top, we have the Global Guardians versus Justice League America in nice big yellow letters there. We have our four fired friends. I'm still working on that one, like what we're going to call them, but the four fired friends from the Justice League are Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, Ice, and Elongated Man. They have their backs against the wall, and they are confronted by J.L. Ayers, Martian Manhunter, Power Girl, and Flash. And the Global Guardians, Owlwoman, Jack-O-Lantern, Tuatara, Olympian, and Bushmaster, I think. It's kind of hard to tell for him.
It totally is.
Yeah. And then there's eight Bialgan soldiers pointing guns. Beetle, as usual, the most level-headed and reasonable member of the team. Right? He's asking, can we talk? And he gets a resounding chorus of 16 no's in reply.
Dude, this cover is awesome. I love it so much. It is so stupid funny. I mean, I love it. You talk first, then I'll go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So we've got basically all the Justice Leaguers are in their costumes. And in the actual book, they're in the civilian clothes, which is fine. Because that was the way it was last cover, too. And, you know, that's just how anyone's going to buy a book when they see a superhero wearing civilian clothes. Probably not, right?
Yep.
Crimson Fox is missing, but that's fine because she wasn't actually kicked out of the league. She's just helping her friends. And, of course, as happens sometimes, this scene isn't actually in the book, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
There's good detail on each of the characters. Like, there's so many characters here. And then you can look in, like, at the small things. Like, you can see Power Girl's earring and the weird stripes on Owlwoman's cape. And so to put that much detail into a giant crowd is pretty cool.
To be fair, the Owlwoman, that's fringe. That's like 1970s fringe.
Yeah, but her arm has, or the edge of the cape or whatever it is, there's zigzag kind of thing.
I totally see what you mean there. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you can also see Power Girl's 90s hair, which is cool.
So I just love Chris Sprouse in this era. He is so stinking good. I mean, all the things you said about the detail is absolutely dead on. The composition is great. You know, one of the things that I love about this is you rattled off all those characters, right? I mean, I didn't count how many you said, but I mean, we're talking dozens of characters at this point, and it doesn't feel crowded. Like, I know exactly where everyone is. And sure, they're crowded, you know, around the bottom together, but you know what I mean by it doesn't feel crowded? It feels like the cover has breathing room?
Yeah, there's actual space between them because it's a confrontation. They're being held at gunpoint, so you need some space there, and it's all sort of built into the camera angle, for lack of a better word, and just the way it's approached. It's like, you know, truly like a really dynamic look and a great image.
Yeah, I just adore it. A couple things here. When Ted yells, you know, can we talk? You know, talk is in a different, it's the same font, but it's now outlined as if to emphasize that word to set it apart. And it makes me wonder, is this supposed to, because it's 1991, is this supposed to be a Joan Rivers nod? You know, can we talk? Remember yeah, she used to do that?
Yeah, totally could be, yeah.
So I never really thought I would mention Joan Rivers in a JLI podcast, but there you have it. Now, there are double credit errors on this cover, which is disappointing, because I mentioned it a second ago. In the letters page, they credit this cover to the wrong people. They credit this cover to Derek Robertson and John Beatty, who actually do the cover of Justice League Europe. So that's wrong. And then in the credits in the upper right-hand corner, it says art by Wozniak and Smith. Well, that's not right. Smith was the inker last issue. It's supposed to be Wozniak and Patterson. So that's a little bit of dropping the ball on some of the creator credits here, which isn't great.
As a former copy editor, I'm truly offended by that. You know, that could have been caught. It should have been caught. And it's ridiculous.
Well, it happened with Justice League Europe a month or two ago, too, where Derek Robertson's first issue on Justice League Europe, he mentioned this on Twitter. He was so excited. He ran to the comic shop, bought the comic, and they had the wrong creator credits on the cover. He didn't even get credited on the cover of the comic he drew. He was like heartbroken the first time. So.
Yeah,
it seems to be happening more and more on this book. So that's disappointing. But
you know, it's maybe they're a little burnt out, they're winding down, or something like that. But it's just it's not all together. And I think they fired Brenda Pope, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure Brenda worked on this particular book, but okay. Yeah, by this point they probably would have moved on to Arlene Lowe, who's a great copy editor. Yeah. But I don't know if that she's doing covers and checking for mm-hmm. credit. You know, she's more I think looking for grammar. But mm-hmm. either way, it's a great Chris Sprouse cover.
A little credit to the colorist, because the you know the color of the ground and the wall behind them is the exact same as the gradient of Breakdowns. Like, so it totally matches the logo, which is fantastic.
Gosh, that's brilliant. That is super clever. And, you know, also credit to the colorist, because all those characters in the foreground, they could have done them in single color. Like, especially mm-hmm. the soldiers, they didn't have to do the green berets and the flesh-toned yeah. skin and the hands and all that. And even, now I'm looking on the backpacks and their uniforms are different colors even, two slightly different mm-hmm. gradients of reddish-brown. So, I mean, they put a lot of effort into this. So they did a great job.
And this is probably a record. There are 17 word balloons on the cover, so I know you're a huge fan of that. So this is your favorite cover of all time. Like, end of story. We don't even talk about it any further than this, right?
It's up there now. Okay. Now that you pointed that out, I actually showed it to my wife before we started recording, going, "Isn't this great?" And she's like, "Uh-huh." I'm like, "No, look how funny it is." She goes, "Yeah, it's funny." I'm like, "Okay, it's great." You know, and that's praise out of her, because I mean, she yeah. doesn't care about any of this crap we talk about. So
fantastic.
All right, let's get into this. So inside plot, normally I would say Breakdowns by Keith Giffen, but I'm pretty sure those got thrown out the window. Script by JMD Mateus. Penciler is Chris Wozniak. Inker is Bruce Patterson. Letter is Bob LePan. Colorist is Gene D'Angelo. Assistant editor is Kevin Dooley. And editor is Andy Helfer. This is Breakdowns Part 5, and the issue is called Bealia Blues. You want to start us off?
All right. A mixed league team races to Bealia on a mission to find the four fired friends. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to stick with it.
Fair
no
enough.
One likes this. No one likes the situation, especially Blue Jay, who's on his first mission as field leader. Jean gives him some leadership advice, but Blue Jay points out, speaking for the reader, that the Justice League is supposed to be fun. Jean says they stopped having fun when Max Lord was shot. Meanwhile, the Fired Four, plus a fox, face the reanimated Global Guardian. Ted, speaking for the reader, asks if they are having fun yet. Jack says, in a bad Irish accent, "No, I can't do it. I'll just say it. Not yet, Blue Beetle, but soon. I can't even try an Irish accent. I won't do it."
Let's not offend the Irish embassy with that. So that's fair.
So Captain Atom is angry, almost as if he's ready to become a villain, and he turns into metal to fight. Over in the palace, Queen Bee watches the fight and wonders who's framing her for Max, but she hopes this big fight will solve all her JLI problems at once. The fired friends made the smart move and retreated behind a wall made of and by ice. Ted, who knows how to set up a running gag, gives Ice a backhanded compliment about her allegedly lame powers.
Harjavati, but I'm probably not saying it right.
Harjavati? I don't know. Yeah. Harjavati or the guy. He's right. Watching the fight too, and he spends a page yelling to himself before he realizes he sounds like his idiot brother. And I had to look back, and we've already established that this is actually the brother and not the other guy come back to life or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then Elrond interrupts to read us some letters and encourage us to cut up our comic.
That's true. That is accurate.
The fight moves to a room that Queen Bee uses to brainwash people. Captain Atom agrees with Beetle that they shouldn't have an all-out fight here. But of course, that goes poorly and the Guardians engage again. Thankfully, I guess, the rest of the League shows up, having been tipped off by the Queen Bee. But as they arrive, the entire city block caves in on the battle site. The fired friends are saved under an ice shell, and Beetle recants his lame comment. Queen Bee is kind of mad that her entire mind control complex is destroyed and the JLI saw the whole thing. She heard a new creative team is coming on the book, so she gets ready to leave town. But Harjavati is right behind her.
I'll take it from here, although I'm not as clever and witty as you are, sir. So, meanwhile, in the New York embassy, Inspector Kamis confronts Ambassador Heimlich with evidence of his betrayal of the League, suggesting perhaps he's a robot. But then later they tell us he might not be, so I'm really confused about that point. Then, back in Bialya, as the dust begins to settle, the Queen Bee's secret mind control complex has been destroyed. The Global Guardians find themselves confused, as if a veil has been lifted from their minds. The Guardians are in disarray as Dr. Mist is revealed to be a robotic doppelganger. Owlwoman is missing, and the Little Mermaid and Jack-O-Lantern are both dead. But in the case of Jack-O-Lantern, it's revealed that the man behind the mask is not the same man who was a Global Guardian teammate in the past. Mysteries. Inexplicably, Ice is panicked about the safety of her family. This leads Ice and Fire to fly out of there and leave Bialya at top speed, completely unexplained. Poor Rex has to explain their disappearance to Martian Manhunter. Elsewhere in the Bialyan capital city, Suman Harjavati brutally assassinates the Queen Bee. Yes, that's right. Our lead villain for the past 3+ years is dead. Then, through a series of TV news reports, we learn that Harjavati has taken the place of the Queen Bee as the ruler of Bialya. Further news reveals that Ambassador Heimlich has been exposed as a drone of the Queen Bee and is removed as a JLI liaison. And it wraps up with a page of Big Sur watching over Maxwell Lord's bedside. Next, in JLA 31, things get bad. Then in JLA 56, things get even worse. Oof. All right. So, Devin, this issue wraps up a whole lot of story, very explosively, quite literally. Let's start with big picture thoughts. What do you think?
So, you're famous for having a podcast where you only talk about stuff that you really like and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to throw that out the window, and maybe you can come on my podcast where I just complain about stuff that I hate.
I'm going to let you say your bit, but I will say this real quick as a bit of a setup, folks. Like, I'm sorry, okay? Just as Devin implied, I'm always about find your joy, right? And I like to be positive about the comics we discuss. And this show has been going for 7 years. And if you listen back, there is a lot of evidence of me being very, 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 very positive. So I'm going to do my best through the remainder of this episode. But there are some legitimate concerns about this comic book. Specifically for me, at least, and we'll find out where Devin lands, on the comic book art side and on the editorial coordination. So now my concern's not with the story of the script, but with those other things. So we're going to do our best. We're not going to dwell on the bad stuff, but we are going to have to talk about some of it. So Devin, take it away.
So as a single issue, this doesn't work well for me. It's not satisfying. It's not a comic I would pick up and read and go, oh, that was awesome. You know, my dollar or whatever it was well spent. But, and it, I got to say it, maybe that's the only issue of JLI that I can actually say that about, because they all have redeeming qualities and stuff like that. But so we're essentially at the end of Act One of Breakdowns, like the first third of it. So, you know, the ending doesn't have to be like, you know, major, and it can be a bit of a letdown. And it's fine because the story is continuing, but like it's not put together properly. Like some of the ingredients are here, but the execution, and I'm not talking about the execution of Queen Bee, it's the execution of the issue that I have a problem with. So it's part 5 of 15, and yet we're kind of like rushed towards the ending. Throughout the fight, it kind of happens a little bit off screen, like we're checking in on them and then they move somewhere else off screen. And then we come back to them and something happens, and then we go to another kind of cutaway thing. We get 3 different pages of TB News exposition showing us that Heimlich is out. And like, why wouldn't that be a confrontation with the League as they return? Because you see at the end, they come back to the embassy. So that's kind of weird.
So real quick on some of that, like the stuff, especially where you talked about stuff being off panel and whatnot, like if you look at the way this issue is laid out, it does not look like Giffen's layouts were followed here. These do not look like traditional Keith Giffen layouts at all. So I got to think that Wozniak, this is just my speculation, folks. I don't know anything, so forgive me. I don't want to offend anyone. It looks like Wozniak looked at the breakdowns and said, okay, I'm going to do my own thing. But this is kind of what Giffen wants to say. So I am wondering if in changing those breakdowns, it sort of pigeonholed JMD Mateus and what he could put in the script. And so, because I do feel like as you look at this art, you can't look at this art and figure out what the story is. And most, in a good comic book, you usually can. You can just look at the pictures and figure out what's going on. I would say here, without the script, you really cannot figure out what's happening here. And I think there's a lot of dancing that JMD Mateus had to do, again, total speculation, in the script to make the art tell the story they needed it to.
That explains a lot. I mean, I like your theory because I wouldn't want to blame my favorite comic creators for messing up kind of like the flow of the story. But, if someone came in and said, I'm not going to do that, I'm just going to draw it my own way, or I don't know if they were rushed or whatever and they didn't have time to do a full thing they normally do because there's a lot of stuff going on right now. But yeah, he was kind of definitely, by doing the art this way, hamstringing like the storytelling for sure.
Yeah, like the brain, the part where they go to the brainwashing complex and then when mm-hmm. the explosions are demolishing the city. I can't even tell what's going on there.
Yeah, so there's these people like that are kind of just faint outlines toward the bottom of the page. And there's one guy in a suit who looks scared. And I can't tell if it's like he's an evil scientist or whatever. But they're in the dialogue, they commented, oh, this is where she brainwashes people. So we want to protect these innocents and whatever. And it's supposed to be obviously kind of horrifying, especially when all those people die a few pages later. But we didn't see any details on them. We can't see their expressions. We can't see what condition they're in. We don't know, have any idea who they are. And so who cares that they're dead a few pages later? It's bizarre.
So, all right, I'll put this out there. I mean, so it comes down to the art. All right, folks, that's my biggest issue here is like when we covered Justice League America 53, which was 2 issues ago. That was Wozniak's first issue. And my guest and I, we were fairly critical of Wozniak's art, which was inked by Bruce Patterson at that point, which is the same inker on this issue. But I think we found some positive things to say about his style. And I do have a few things to say that are positive in a minute I'm going to get to. Then we covered last issue, which was 54, where actually we were overwhelmingly positive about Wozniak's art. It was inked by Bob Smith. I mean, in that issue, it really seemed like Wozniak found the perfect moments to show restraint. Really did. And then he dialed up the superheroic physiques when he needed to, but there was the perfect amount of restraint. I mean, it was great. Now here we are with issue 55, and I would say all semblance of artistic restraint is gone. I mean, this is balls to the wall, 90s extreme art, and sadly, not in a good way. I mean, it's everything you expect. It's the screaming faces. It is the, bad girl art. It is the ridiculous physique, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's the shouting faces, the not showing feet. I mean, it's all the bad tropes of the 90s are right here. Lack of backgrounds. It's disappointing. So again, I don't want to dwell on it, but if you see the issue or you flip or go to our gallery, look at the pages, you're going to go, I see what they mean.
Yeah, and actually, now that you mention all that, the fact that the letters page has to be put in the front of the book on like page 7 or 8 or something like that, obviously there was some sort of miscommunication on how the book should be structured, like which pages can be left or right and which can be facing, a 2-page spread or anything like that. That's supposed to be planned out so that the ads are in the right place. And obviously that didn't happen quite right. So something went wrong somewhere along the way.
I did not think about that. I wonder it's a 2-page letter page. Maybe that is what happened. I don't know. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was the pagination they had to fix by doing that. I did think it was weird that the letters page was right there in the middle. That was very strange.
Yeah, they say it so that they can have the 2-page spread later, but like, I'm not sure what stops you from doing a 2-page spread anyway. I mean, to go off on a total tangent, I used to work at a newsprint magazine and we did have certain placement for the ads and stuff. So I don't know if that's why, but
anyway. Yeah. Well, all right. So let me get the art stuff complaints out of the way. I just want to knock it out because I'd rather focus on the positives best we can. Mm-hmm. Like page 2 and 3, you know, there's this huge splash page across both pages, right? It's the Global Guardians facing against, what'd you call them? The Fired Friends or something like that?
Yeah, the Four Fired Friends.
Yep. And that page is so extreme 90s. So, I mean, again, extreme disproportionate physique, energy lines everywhere instead of backgrounds, no feats, faces yelling. Everyone's got weapons. There's claws, there's pointy weapons, there's crackling energy. I mean, it's just all over the place. And that page, again, I showed that page to my wife, and she's like, ew. Then you get further on page 9, you get these very crazy 1990s pages again. Lots of gratuitous butt shots of the ladies and stuff like that. Now, with that said, then, and I talked about this last episode, when Wozniak draws regular people, he does a really good job. It's when he draws the superhero stuff, he ramps it up to, well, he breaks the knob past 11. He cranks it to like 15 or something. So like, for example, on page 4, there's a great close-up of Queen Bee's face. And she looks beautiful. She looks worried. You see her eyes, you see her hair. That's a gorgeous face. I mean, like, wow, give me more of that, please. Or mm-hmm. on page 6, Harjavati. You know, there's a whole page of Harjavati kind of talking to himself and doing all the soliloquy stuff, whatever. He looks great. He looks dangerous. He looks scary. Again, when Wozniak's just drawing regular people, that's his. I mean, he's great at that. So I wish we had gotten more of that.
And, you know, on page 7, there's sort of an expression on Ted's face, because he's not in costume, but there's an expression that's kind of really cool. But right next to him is a very strange-looking Captain Atom who looks like a statue.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the scientist dude at the bottom of that page, if you've ever read Blue Devil, that's Jock Werner is who that looks like, racing at the camera. And if you didn't read Blue Devil, then you don't know who that is. But that's who that looks like.
It's on my list, for sure.
There we go.
I think that carries over, like you were saying, to some of the storytelling. Like, after the battle on page 14, by the way, the battle ends in the middle of the comic, kind of, like, and then it's all aftermath, but then it's still not paced properly, which is odd. But Jean comments on how Queen Bee is dead, I think, and then he tells the Guardians to help them deal with whatever problems they're suffering through. And then he says, oh, by the way, a lot of people here were killed. This is terrible. Like, he gets to that third.
Okay. I hadn't thought about that. Now, again, that might be constrained by the art, because it's panel after panel of Jean with the Global Guardians, and then you see the last panel is him looking at the city, the remains mm-hmm. of the city. So maybe they were constrained. Again, I'm not trying to throw all the shade in one direction. Well, yeah, I guess I am trying to throw all the shade in one direction, but that'd be my assumption.
Well, and if you think about the way they were publishing at this time, if anything did go wrong, they can't delay this book a week because it leads directly into two crossovers.
Good point. And by the way, just in case you're not aware, the style, and I can't promise you they did this with Wozniak, but the style that they typically followed was Giffen would write a plot, and he would do it in breakdown form. He'd draw little breakdowns, and that was the plot, and he'd send it to the artist. The artist would draw it, and then it would go to JMD Mateus to write the script after the art was done. So, again, I don't know that they followed that process here, but that's, again, what my gut's telling me. After reading and spending 7 years studying these things, that's what my gut's telling me.
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, he would say, do a full page to, cut away to a different scene or whatever, but it seems weird that they have, you know, full pages to other action on pages 6, 11, 12, 19, and 20, and 22, where stuff is happening elsewhere, and I feel like all of it could have been condensed down into a couple panels, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't have to be an entire page where you cut away to Queen Bee talking to herself, and then Harjavati talking to himself, and didn't have to be separate pages, for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of full pages, let's talk real quick about page 18. That is the death of the Queen Bee. So she's been murdered. She's been shot by Harjavati. It's a pretty powerful page. You've got some notes on it. I do too as well. I'll just say, as much as I kind of like this page at first, and I probably did a lot back then, nowadays, now that people have pointed out that trope to me, I'm not the world's biggest fan of the sexy victim trope. You know, where she's still drawn sexy, but she's a victim. And that's once you're aware of that trope, it's like, oh, yeah, that doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah. So I did some Googling and I found the original art actually was auctioned off at some point. And so if you look at the art, like, I think he meant all of that stuff all over her to actually be like, you know, blood, probably red, mm-hmm. but it's colored kind of like black and kind of dark. And so it's debatable exactly what's all over her. But it's kind of gross as it is, but it would be way worse. And I think the colorist maybe saved them like a problem with the Comics Code Authority, if that still existed.
So, all right, multiple things on that. First off, I did the same Googling you did, believe it or not, and ended up on the same Heritage Auction website. And so, all right, we're bagging on the art, right? Okay, straight up, no way around it. So a lot of these comic book arts, I mean, you guys know what original comic art goes for. It's pretty expensive stuff. Back in 2008, this page sold on Heritage Auction website for $31. Ouch. That kind of tells you right there the popularity, at least at that point, of this.
We've had a lot of inflation since then, you know.
And sure.
I think we were buying a dozen eggs for like 50 cents, and, you know, like a Coke was a dime. That's what I remember from back then. So, yeah, you know, of course, $31.
I don't think it was a dime, but okay, unless you were born in the 50s. But so here's – this is just me, and my wife's not getting on board with this. I tried asking her, but you help me out here. So look at the queen bee there, right? Yeah, very sick. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, her out. Now, whether you look on this page or a different page, I don't care. You look at any page she's on. She is wearing an orange bodysuit, right? And over that, she's wearing sort of a wrap kind of bikini looking thing, right? Mm-hmm. But if you really look at it closely, the way he's drawn it and the way it's colored, again, I think it's the colorist trying to save a Comics Code thing. I think she's supposed to be mostly naked, because I think that orange bodysuit is not a bodysuit. I think that's just supposed to be skin color. Because if you really think about it, does it make sense to wear an orange bodysuit with like a bikini thing on top of that? Or is she supposed to be scantily clad like she typically is? And I'm still talking, so be quiet. So the piece that people would point to would be the neck, like, oh, but look, she's got a neckline. I would argue that neckline could just be the top of the cape and should be colored blue like the cape. So, all right, tell me why I'm right or wrong.
Okay, I think there's possibly you're right and wrong. So I looked back at the previous appearance of her, and she was wearing a different outfit. This is not a costume. This is just clothes that she wears when she's hanging around being a queen. Mm-hmm. I also looked back at the pre-crisis queen bee, because I was curious if it was some kind of like reference to that. Oh. And her costume is orange and black, you know, because a bee is orange and black, I guess. I don't know.
Sure.
Makes sense. Anyway, so the orange may come from there. But the reason I think it's actually a bodysuit is because her feet look like they're shoes or boots or something like that. She doesn't seem to have any toes. So I could be right that it's a bodysuit because, you know, there's no definition on the toes. But you could be right because it's the 90s and you mentioned that people had trouble drawing feet. So.
That's a good point. The feet is an issue. I did debate about that, and I did sort of lean in my head like, oh, well, it's the 90s. Then no one knows how to draw feet. Or perhaps the inker misinterpreted and drew it as a bodysuit when he meant for it to have toes. I don't know. Or maybe there was supposed to be a boot line. Like, you know, maybe that was supposed to be a shoe she was wearing or something. I don't know. Just considering how vacuum-packed tight or vacuum-sealed that bodysuit is on her, and you can see every ab and the hint of either the shadow of a belly button or whatever, I just feel like she's supposed to not be wearing that bodysuit. But either way, I think it was a coloring issue. Anyway.
It's a weird outfit, I guess. And it's too bad that she died in it, too.
So that's something that disappoints me, is I am bummed about the death of the queen bee. Like, I find her infinitely more interesting than Harjavati. So I was bummed that she died. But the flip side of that is, and here's some of the nice things about this issue, is there's a lot of plot wrapping up here. I mean, this is kind of an exciting issue from a plot perspective. I mean, the Queen Bee storyline's been going around over 3 years, you know, through both books. The Global Guardians have been a going concern since Justice League Europe #1, or #2, really. But either way, so these plots have been woven through the Justice League all this time, so it feels like it's sort of fulfilling a promise that breakdowns is a big deal in the life of the Justice League. And I feel like that is they're paying off that promise this issue, which is also sort of surprising that it's only issue 5 of 15. Because like from here, you're like, where do they go from here? You know, okay, interesting.
It almost feels like they're trying to reset Bialya, so it's being run by kind of the same guy who it was when they started, which doesn't make any sense because they invented the country for this book. So
right.
They don't have to do anything. They could have just left it.
Like, yep. I totally agreed.
So at some point they discover that all this time Dr. Mist has been a robot, which I don't really understand why he'd be a robot instead of just being mind controlled like everyone else. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me. What do you think about that?
I think I have the answer on that one because of some comments other people have made. Specifically, it's about Dr. Mist being a robot and about Jack-O-Lantern not being the original and Owlwoman being missing. Because I believe, if memory serves, there's going to be a backup in Justice League Quarterly all mm-hmm. about the Global Guardians. Oh, and I think it's going to focus on Dr. Mist, Jack-O-Lantern, and Owlwoman. So it sort of makes sense that they end this story with sort of a dangling plot, which then gets picked up in JLQ.
Oh, you told us not to read that one, so I guess I can't.
You're welcome to. I do encourage you guys to read them. I'm just not going to cover them on the air because Giffen and DeMatteis don't have anything to do with them.
Yeah, then forget it. I'm out.
There are other comics in the world that Giffen and DeMatteis had nothing to do with that are good. I'm just saying.
True, exactly. Like one of them is War of the Gods, right? So that's where Ice and Fire are heading off, and they're going to fight Thor. How awesome is that?
You say your bit first on this, and then I'll say my bit.
It's cool, but actually not that Thor. We're like a couple years away from a Marvel-DC crossover, so it's just some rando Thor from the DC universe.
Okay, so I said in the beginning here that I had complaints about the art and editorial direction. Here is where that comes in. Now, I've already mentioned the letters page had the mix-up on who did the cover credits, and the cover itself had some cover credit mix-up, right? So that's, you know, an issue that should have been caught. The other one here is, okay, page 16, right? Fire and Ice, they disappear, you know, Ice freaks out, my family, and she takes off. She's gone. And Fire's like, well, I'm going with you. It takes off. As the reader, you know, at this point, I'd be like, where the hell'd they go? Well, I guess I'll find out next issue. Well, that's not how that's supposed to be. There really, really needs some sort of editorial footnote in that panel or in the letters page somewhere telling the reader to go read War of the Gods number 2. And I'll talk about this a lot more when we get to the Justice League Europe issue this month, so I'm not going to really harp on it too much. But there should be some sort of notation to the reader to go read War of the Gods number 2, because that's where that story's going. Not to Justice League Europe, but to War of the Gods number 2. It's very confusing.
And like the whole book is kind of missing like captions or like scene setters or like, you know, meanwhile, back at the embassy kind of thing. It doesn't have any of that editorial like additions and stuff. So I don't know if they just didn't have time or they felt like the art stood for itself. But that's definitely an omission there, because I wouldn't know necessarily that it's War of the Gods. I probably think it's Armageddon 2001 because they're in that. You know, it's like kind of there's a Justice League Europe annual. So why wouldn't they show up in something like that? So like, I have no idea where they're going at this point. And I think I probably was going to read War of the Gods, but like, I might not have bought it yet. I don't even know.
Oh, and also, while you're on that, there's a Justice League Europe annual. Really?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Where does that take place? Is that right after this issue?
Yeah, it is.
Is there any notation in this comic book anywhere that tells you to go read that annual next?
No, if you're confused, you can wait 30 years and listen to it in a podcast.
Well, right. I mean, but there's there should be a huge mention in the next issue box that tells you to go read Justice League Europe annual number 2 next, and then Armageddon 2001 number 2 before going to Breakdowns part 6, Justice League Europe number 31, because it's kind of important for Captain Atom. I mean, it's just a little bit. And there's, again, so cover credits, not mentioning War of the Gods, not mentioning Armageddon 2001. I love this book, but what's going on?
Yeah, all that would be really useful information. Or I can just wait for Omnibus number 3 to come out, because I'm sure that'll come out soon, right? it'll all be in there in the right order and everything.
Well, there was supposed to be a Breakdown trade paperback, or multiple trade paperbacks at one point. I guess they would have put all that in there. I don't know. But yeah, sadly, I think as the reader, you would not know the next. I mean, you would just assume you go to Breakdowns Part 6, right? I mean, so yeah. You'd miss the War of the Gods, you'd miss the Justice League Europe Annual, and you'd miss Armageddon 2001. So as Doug and I will discuss in the back half of this, it's pretty confusing when you get to Justice League Europe, that issue.
And I mean, Ice is confused anyway. I mean, obviously she's having something going on, but how does she plan to get to War of the Gods? Like, she can't fly, right? Is she going to go to the airport? Is Fire going to like try to carry her and then burn her? Like, how does that work?
Well, I do like that she creates the Bobby Drake, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends ice slide and just zooms along that, which is pretty slick. But
that,
yeah,
that can definitely get you back to Europe, right?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought that one. Maybe they take the shuttle, which, by the way, all right, let's talk about the shuttle on page 1. Because yeah. I don't know where you're going to fall on this, but I think the shuttle looks pretty badass. Like, it's no design I've ever seen, but I really like what Wozniak's done. He's got all kinds of cool energy flares and lights, and it's like a J.J. Abrams film up in here with all the lens flares. And I like it, but I never seen it before, or probably never see it again, but it looks cool.
I mean, they mentioned a couple issues ago that the Justice League Europe doesn't have a shuttle, and they have to use, like, they wish they had the JLA one, but this is not it. This is not the shuttle they've had the whole time. Mm-mm. And I don't know if like I missed something and it had been rebuilt or something like that. So I don't know where this came from, but it does look pretty cool. It's a weird shape. It's kind of rectangular and wide, but yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I dug it.
Oh, and another thing on page 3, where they give the credits, it says, breakdowns continues, courtesy of Giffen, DeMatteis, Wozniak, Patterson, Lappin, D'Angelo, Dooley, and Helfer. Okay, we admit it. We couldn't think of any funny credits this month. Readers who subscribe only for the funny credits should contact our subscription department for an adjustment. They can use a laugh.
So, that's awesome. I love that.
At some point, the editorial people just ran out of steam, and they're like, I don't know, just put a joke there.
It's a good joke, though. It works. Yes. I like it. Okay, so here's something to think about. The next issue, as we've made it clear, but the comic book doesn't, to read is Justice League Europe Annual number 2. And we covered that a few months ago, folks, during the Armageddon 2001 crossover. It just made more sense to do with them. But in that issue, some of the heroes are griping about Blue Jay blowing his first mission as team leader. I completely disagree. There's nothing in this comic where Blue Jay, I mean, he whined a little bit, but other than that, Blue Jay didn't do anything wrong. Did I miss something there?
So I guess they were still mad that he was made leader for no good reason or something.
Mm.
And yeah, he literally didn't do anything that I'm aware of. So I don't know why they would be mad, and possibly a dropped plot point that they just forgot about or something.
It could be. And really, if you want, you could almost play the Raiders Indiana Jones game here. We're saying the Justice League, other than their presence being there, didn't really impact anything in this story. Because the Queen Bee and really Harjavati really are the ones who made everything happen this issue. You know, Harjavati blew everything up, which you know, and then he kills the Queen Bee. So really, all the Global Guardians got released from their brainwashing. The Justice League didn't really beat each other. They didn't have they had a little bit of a fight, but it didn't go very far. So it's sort of that game where you say, you know, if you remove Indiana Jones from Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, the story still happens the same way. Mm-hmm. I know people argue this not true. I'm not getting into that with you people. I get it. I'm just saying the story had to happen because the Justice League had to be there in order for Harjavati to do this, but they really didn't affect the outcome. It was going to happen the same way anyway.
Yeah, and that's immensely dissatisfying for what seems to be the last part of what we consider now to be like a 5-issue arc.
Hmm.
But as part 5 out of 15, it kind of makes sense for the heroes to be sort of set back a little bit and not like have a satisfying conclusion to this. And there's sort of something else is going to happen. But I really can't remember if anything else happens with these characters. So,
well, and we still don't know for sure who shot Max. I mean, we're pretty sure it was Jack-O-Lantern, but the Justice League don't know that, you know? And so now I will say on the positive side, props to Harjavati, honestly, for orchestrating an epic coup. I mean, you know, assuming he is responsible for the shooting of Maxwell Lord, which it does seem like, you know, he framed the Queen Bee. He manipulated the Justice League. He turned one of the Queen Bee's agents, Jack-O-Lantern, against her, and he straight up executed her. I mean, he created a plan, he worked the plan, and he succeeded with the plan. So whether you like him or not, the man knew what he was doing. So props to you, Harjavati. Good job.
Good job. You're dictator of the week. Congratulations.
So, all right, Rolf Heimlich, like, seriously, was he mind control or was he a robot? I'm still not clear on that.
Like, I don't know why they resolved it off, kind of off panel, and kind of like it was a confrontation with Camus or Camus or whatever you say that, that, yeah, he's kind of a part of the team a little bit, and or at least we know him. So that's a little bit satisfying. But like, they made such a build up to him taking over and being in control, and suddenly he's gone. Like, what's the end game here, storytelling wise?
Yeah, like I'm actually okay with it because I feel like they have built up Camus or Camus enough. And I feel like him and Heimlich, I don't know, both being regular humans, non-power, they make a good pairing. I kind of like it. For whatever reason, it just sits well with me. The part that confused me, though, is Camus comes in and he keeps referring to robots over and over and over. And he's saying, like, Heimlich, you know all about robots, don't you? You know all about machines that think they're human. And then at the end, there's a news report where it says Heimlich was mind-controlled and not a robot. So that's the part where I'm like, well, which is it? I'm not sure what happened there. Either way.
Maybe they'll never mention it again.
I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm pretty sure he's gone. So the best thing here, though, we got to mention is Rex the Wonder Dog gets a shout out from General Glory. And the implication is that Rex the Wonder Dog may have been General Glory's dog at one point, which is like, whoop, whoop, total nice. Win for me.
Way to go, Rex.
Exactly. So, all right. Big picture here, you know, where I think we've hit all the major beats of the story. You know, again, it's a massive wrap up of 3 years of saga. I love it for that. The art is just, like, the super heroic moments are god-awful. I'm sorry. But the regular human moments are really, really nice. So there's a lot of bad. There's some good, at least artistically. Story-wise, I think there's a lot here. I really do. I feel satisfied. I know you said it feels unsatisfying. I feel kind of satisfied with the big resolutions that happen. Big picture, what do you think? Wrapping up the thoughts on this issue.
Like I said, when I talked about my origin with the Justice League, I'm here for the characters mostly and the humor, which there wasn't a ton here, but it's not necessarily about the superpowered heroics and all that action for me. So from that basis, it could definitely be a satisfying issue and all the pieces were here. It just didn't come together for me.
Fair enough. So we get to that letters page you mentioned. There is a vote for league membership. You mentioned Elrond wants you to cut up your comic. You said that in the recap. What it means is, yeah, there's literally a cut here line, and it gives you a bunch of checkboxes for characters you can vote for to join the Justice League. Because they say that issue 61, they're going to really shake things up. That's, of course, when Dan Jurgens takes over. Oh, interesting. Okay. So, by the way, this voting log is in both Justice League America and Justice League Europe. But the mailing location is different for each. In Justice League America, they want you to mail it to Justice Log membership. And for Justice League Europe, they want you to mail it to Euro Opinion membership. So that's kind of nice. So you vote. Who would you vote for to join the team? That's not already on the team.
I think I would take all of these people and just make them a giant team and maybe start a third book. But just me. So, no, I'm going to go with a theme team, and I'll get Black Canary, Blue Devil, Blue Beetle, Blue Jay, Crimson Fox, Green Arrow, Green Lantern Guy, Green Lantern Hal, of course. And let's see, Rocket Red and Silver Sorceress.
Perfect. I don't know what theme you're going for there, but it sounds interesting.
Just people I'd like to have a conversation with.
Let's call them Justice League Crayola.
So. Yeah, perfect.
For me, I don't know. There's all kinds of characters I would pick, but I would point out that Firestorm didn't make the list here. Shame. There's reasons.
Isn't he weird at this point?
Yeah, he's weird at this point.
Okay.
But Blue Devil's on the list, so that would get my vote, absolutely. I would love to see Blue Devil under Jan Jurgens' tenure rather than the Justice League tenure that he ended up in. So, and we'll say more about this on the Justice League Europe issue because it's also in there.
I would have voted for Kevin Dooley until this issue. And I'm like,
we don't, it could be Kevin that dropped the ball. It might be Andy that dropped the ball. There, maybe they have an assistant to the assistant editor that dropped the ball. I don't know. I don't want to throw shade on specific people other than the artist. I just want to throw shade and say, there's some editorial dropping the ball here. That's for sure. So
putting them in there is a great joke though. So I like that part.
That's fair. Absolutely. And this is issue 55. The previous 54 have been amazing. So, everyone's got an off month. Good Lord, I have a million off days. So, every day, practically. So, all right. So, I got to ask you, as I ask everyone, as we're doing breakdowns, because, breakdowns has a very divisive reputation. Some folks love it. Some folks, or I even hear the majority of folks, carry some hard feelings for the storyline. So, does this issue of breakdowns deserve its bad reputation, or is it better than most folks remember?
So, the only thing that I didn't like about breakdowns when it came out was that it was the end of the era. Like around this time, and I've been trying to find the article, but I know I read an article where they were like, it's time for the Justice League to stop screwing around and get serious again. So we're going to bring in Dan Jurgens and he's going to fix everything. And I couldn't find that article. Maybe I imagined it, but and I took that personally, to be honest. So I love the Bwahaha era, and I was kind of mad that it was all ending. I love Dan Jurgens. I was following all the Superman books. It was nothing against him personally, but I was like, I dropped the books and forget it. And, to be honest, they never really got super serious. So it was maybe a little overblown, but I liked breakdowns as it was going on, but I was just kind of pissed that it was ending. So, and then I reread it around 2007 or so when I got back into comics. And I liked it then too. I reread the whole Justice League International thing back then. And then I've been reading along with you. So, I'm kind of enjoying breakdowns as in theory, but as a single issue, 55 just doesn't work. And, so I don't know if that's why some people feel that way about breakdowns. I didn't know anyone who liked the same comics I did back then. So I have no idea what people thought then, but as the whole story, I think I would just pass right through this and jump to the next annual and Armageddon 2001 and stuff. Cause I was totally engaged in the bigger story. And, when I was thinking about when this came out, and where I was, like, I never read this as just a single issue because it came out in the summer of 91 and I was a CIT at a summer camp. I was away for the entire summer. So all my comics from July and August just piled up. I had like probably parts 2, 3, 4, and 5 and a bunch and the annuals and all the, you know, Armageddon 2001 stuff and the Superman books to read. So I just would have breezed through right through this and not noticed any of the issues and be like, I just need to get to the next issue. So as a part of the story, it flows if you're totally engaged in everything else and kind of not paying attention, I guess. But, you know, as a single issue, it's not doing it.
So you Netflix binged it. So that's fair.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
For me, thanks for asking. I would say that...
Don't you say this every issue?
I would say that I've loved a breakdown so far. It's been fantastic. I did like the story in this one. I like the plot. I like a lot of the scripting. The art is a big letdown for me, but I'm still going to drop this one in the win column. I just maybe would rather listen to the audiobook version of it, kind of thing. So I still
could do a dramatic reading. That'd be awesome.
There we go. So yeah, maybe the guys who did the Superman Lives can record this or something. So it's still in the win column, but boy, the art's a big detractor. So, all right, folks, now it is time for the
Wahaha Award.
This is where we nominate the funniest moment of the issue. Both myself and Devin will pick one moment, and only one will be awarded the coveted Wahaha Award. Now, there's not a lot to laugh about here. As Martian Manhunter said, this book stopped being funny when Max got shot. So we don't have a lot of choices to pick from. So what did you pick for your Wahaha Award?
I was tempted to just pick the credit box where they kind of just made a joke and didn't do anything funny. But as far as the actual, maybe only funny part of the book was the very last page when there's a really long news report talking about what's going on. And Big Sur is standing guard over Max and he's just had enough. He just leans over and changes the channel to a funny cartoon and he feels a lot better about himself. And I feel a lot better about it too.
Well, I like how the ice cream cone magically appears in his hand in the last panel too.
Yeah.
It's like, once the cartoons are on, the ice cream's out. I like that. I would argue there's another funny bit in here where, a Beetle says, wow, Ice, you know, your powers aren't as lame as everyone says or something like that, which is pretty funny, which sets up that reoccurring joke. That's good. Mm-hmm. But for me, my Wahaha moment is the cover. I think the cover is really, really funny. I think the cover's great. I think the art's gorgeous. It sets up the joke. You got 16 word balloons of people yelling no. I love the cover. I think it's genuinely hilarious. So we got to decide, do we give the cover that everyone saw and was convinced them to spend their 4 shiny quarters or the last page that they might not even got to, really, when they were reading it? So what do you think, Devin?
I didn't know we could pick the cover.
Actually, I'm stealing that idea from someone several episodes ago where they picked the cover, and I'm like, ooh, I never thought of that. So, yes, I'm picking the cover.
I got to go with the cover. It's great.
It really is. It really is a great cover. So, all right, fair enough. So we are going to award this to, the four fired friends. Congratulations. You have won the coveted Wahaha Award. Please wear it with pride. It is as tangible as the laughter we give you. Now, Devin, I need to ask a favor.
Sure, anything.
Anything? Great. Would you mind hanging around here for a while and helping sort of clean up the Queen Bee's mind control complex? It's a real, real mess. And it's probably mostly safe for you, like mostly. Would you mind helping out?
So there's a lot of dead bodies, but it's kind of the 90s, so there isn't detail to them. They're just sort of in the background, so I think that's fine. And also, as far as I know, nothing bad ever happens to Bialya again, so I should be totally safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're in the clear. All right. Now, don't worry, Devin. We will bring you back at the end of the show. And after this podcast promo break, I'm going to head over to the London Embassy for the 31st issue of Justice League Europe.
Imagine a state where reality is a dangerous concept, where every aspect of public and private life is strictly controlled, where the voice of the state is the only voice, and the only limits are that of the imagination, and even that is gone. Imagine a state where memories are wiped away, leaving only traces of the past, where the final frontier of space becomes a weightless, freezing vacuum except for what is useful to the state. A great intergalactic state of hundreds of planets that stretches across the universe called the Federation. And imagine all that stands in the way of total conquest is a tiny band of thieves, smugglers, embezzlers, murderers, and rebel rousers. Are they criminals or liberators? Reality is a dangerous concept, but everyone interprets it in a slightly different way in Blake 7. Join April, Alan, and AJ as they talk about the ongoing adventures of Blake 7. Straight Out of the Federation, a Blake 7 podcast. Catch on any of your podcatchers. Straight Out of the Federation, a Blake 7 podcast. Brought to you by the Ride On Network.
Anyone hear us?
This is Trey Lawson.
And I'm James Hickson.
Anyone can hear this broadcast. We need your help.
We've been kidnapped and imprisoned in a tomb by this creepy old undertaker named Mr. Gravely.
And he's forcing us to review his collection of Marvel horror comics. Stuff like Tomb of Dracula,
Werewolf by Night,
Man-Thing,
Ghost Rider,
and so much more. If you can hear this, please contact our families. Tell them we can be found at...
You can find James and Trey every other Wednesday at the Tomb of Ideas, a Marvel horror podcast. See you there, Tomb Believers.
And now, our coverage of Justice League Europe number 31. We're back from break, and I'm here with our second co-host for this episode, this guest...
Hey, whoa. What are you doing, Doug?
Well, this is the issue that takes place right after Armageddon 2001, issue 2, where Monica's revealed to be Captain Atom, right? Wait, no, hang on. They switched at the last moment to Hawk. So, you know, it's all what cool kids are doing, switching hosts, switching things at the last minute. That's all right, isn't it?
No. That is not how this works. That is enough of this nonsense, Doug. I am taking back control of my own show. So, folks, this is the part where, unfortunately, I have to introduce the man you just heard. Just so you know, this guy has binged something like 6 years of the JLI podcast in just under a few months, which, quite frankly, makes me question his sanity. And now that I've got a chance to chat with him and know him a little bit better and his strange addiction to Lego, I question his sanity even more. He is another international guest, though, so I guess he's got that feather in his cap. He is coming to us all the way from the Scotland Embassy. Folks, please help me welcome to the show Mr. Doug Adamson. Welcome to the London Embassy, Doug. Thanks for being here. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much. Just checking what year this is.
Currently 2023 while we're recording.
Is it? Right. Okay. Just, you know, obviously I've been working in Doug years, so, which is, you know, you think you've been doing this podcast for like 7 years or 8 years, or is it 7 decades? I'm never quite sure. And for me, it's basically been maybe 6 months, maybe a little longer, actually. But yeah, so it's weird because I've got like everything ready to go. So excited to be here.
Oh, you remember the old halcyon days before the world went to hell. So that's a little jealous of you, sir.
Yes.
So you are our third, if I'm right. Oh, boy, I hope I'm not forgetting anything. I believe you're our third guest from the Scotland Embassy. However, you're the if I'm right, you're the first one that's actually Scottish. Is that right?
That is true. Yes. Yes, I am Scottish, as you can tell by my natural brogue. And I have to admit, I am trying to change my accent so people can understand me. Because if I went full Scottish, you wouldn't understand what I'm saying, man. And it would just be not me. I mean, you think Scotty's bad? Phew, you have no idea.
There's always the general recommendation of never go full Scottish. Just never do it.
It's never a good idea. Never.
So, folks, Doug has the unenviable position of trying to help me navigate through this particular issue of Justice League Europe, because not only is this Breakdowns Part 6, it is also an Armageddon 2001 crossover and a War of the Gods crossover. So, thank goodness, you know, event fatigue doesn't set in until the 2000s, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So all of those are going to become very important as we get into the issue to be aware of. You don't have to have read those miniseries, folks, but just be aware Armageddon 2001 and War of the Gods, in addition to just being part of Breakdowns, will be critical to the discussion. The important thing to know here is, you know, we just finished covering Justice League America, right? Part 5 of Breakdowns. Well, immediately after that issue of Justice League America, Armageddon 2001 issue 2 takes place. Then we go into Justice League Europe. So there's actually a gap. You can't read JLA straight to JLE without going, huh? What happened? So that's where just, again, Armageddon 2001 Part 2 fits in. And we'll explain how that works and where it fits in. But there are very major implications for Captain Atom in Armageddon 2001 Part 2.
Yeah, if only somebody had told me that when I read them the first time.
Well, you know, another thing I should mention, too, the annual takes place in between as well. So, really, technically, it goes Justice League America, we just covered, Justice League Europe Annual Number 2, which we covered a few months ago, Armageddon 2001 Issue 2, then this issue. So, did you read the annual as well before this or not?
No, I read it last because I got my stuff through mail order. So, I got a big pile of comics and I thought, oh, that looks a juicy 80-page giant. I'll leave that to the end. That'd be really exciting. So that worked out well, didn't it?
Well, you know, that leads us into a great opportunity to hear your origin story with the JLI. How did you find the book? What made you fall in love with it? So, you know, just in general, what happened?
Well, JLI is it's a strange scenario for me, I think, for JLI compared to maybe others, particularly the Americans. But JLI, I bought off the shelf in the UK. And I lived in a small town called Dumfries, which is in the southwest of Scotland. If you ever want to look at a map, don't go there. It's not exciting. It's not worth the effort. But the comics were delivered in like 3-4 months after they were shipped in the States onto the newsstand. And I had been collecting comics for a number of years. I got Justice League 200 out of that collection. Mm. So, you know, so I can trace it back because when I started buying comics. And I'd been to the United States a couple of times at this stage, and so I knew the concept of comic book stores, but still it was newsagents. And I saw the advert for Justice League, as it was, not Justice League, and Justice League issue 1 was coming out, and I think I had issue 6 of Legends. And I went to a newsagent and said, look, if this comes in, can you put it aside for me? Which he did. Unfortunately, as all newsagents do, when you ask for a magazine or a newspaper, they'll write your name in it. So my first 6, 7, maybe even 8 issues of Justice League International have got my name written on them, Adamson, which is great because obviously if I become super famous, they're going to be worth thousands.
Right.
But right now, they're worth nothing. So, but I loved reading that because Blue Beetle had appeared roughly as well and I'd started getting that. And the comics, when they were delivered to these newsagents, it was hit or miss whether you got them. It was just like there was a big box of them and you just, if you, your book was in there, you were lucky. And if you weren't, you just couldn't get it. Now, there were 4 stores that got these deliveries in my town. There was one that I went to, which was closest to my school. There's another one which was a bit further away from a primary school. And then there's another one, another 400 metres from the other one. Sorry, 500 yards, got to translate. And another one over the side of town. So if your store didn't get them, you could run, if you were quick, to the next store, who might have got a different box of shipment to pull out your issues. So that's how I got my Blue Beetles and my Blue Devil issues, and I've got a much better run from the Justice League for that era than my friends, because I was faster than they were. And they were coming from a different school. So that worked out quite well. I met up with my friends who used to run Edinburgh Comic Con, and we hadn't spoken to each other for years, and he reintroduced ourselves, and we were talking about the fact, oh, yeah, Blue Devil. He says, I never got that issue. He said, really? I got that. That was delivered to the one in Bank Street. And he went, yeah, I never got to the Bank Street store in time. You got there first. Oh, yes, so I did. Sorry. So there was a bit of competition to it, but I just loved Justice League. I'd been a Justice League Satellite Era fan. That was where I'd been introduced to it. I enjoyed Justice League Detroit, and here's a new Justice League with Blue Beetle, and I had fallen in love with Ted Kord's Blue Beetle as a character. I thought he was fantastic. So that's what started me off. I got most of the issues no problem. I did miss issue 3, I think, and I had to try and find it mail order, which was weird because I'd never done that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was like phoning down stores in England saying, do you have Justice League issue 3? And they went, which one? And they said, well, the new one. And they'd say, yes, and it's $3,000. And I go, £3,000. I go, what?
Oh, the alternate cover.
No. They meant Justice League original.
Oh.
They meant as of the first run round. It's like, yeah, we've got, and I had to shout, no, it's the new one. Oh, right. Yeah, no, we've got that. And eventually got it posted to me. Didn't see the alternative cover in my life.
Okay.
And then later on, when the newsagent started becoming a little bit more spotty, thanks to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had gone mad in the UK. It was everywhere. It was on every TV screen on the cartoon and Christmas. And there was a newspaper article in the newspaper my father read about a store in Edinburgh that had gone turtle mad. And this is the year before Batman. You have to remember, before the Batman movie. And this was the science fiction bookshop and how they were selling out of comics all over the place. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, time to import the toys and sell them. Couldn't get them in fast enough. And that meant I'd found a comic store for the first time in the UK. I didn't know they had comic stores in the UK at that stage. So I said to my father, who worked in Edinburgh occasionally, Dad, can you go around? He went round, went into the store, started picking up shoes, discovered they had mail order, and that was me. From there on, mail order. It was brilliant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been reading Justice League right from the beginning, and I have some special signed by my newsagent issues.
Well, I always found it charming when you'd find a kid's comic that had their name written on it, like as if they were trying to keep track of it. But it's even better if the newsagent wrote it on it. That's special.
Yeah. It's not even my handwriting, because it's better than my handwriting. And I should also say that when Justice League Europe came out, I mean, that was like, oh, fantastic. Finally, a team in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I wrote to a comic book company, was I wrote a letter when Justice League Europe 1 came out. And I think if you go back to the letter call from issue 4, I'm named when they answer all my questions but don't actually put the questions in. So I have no idea what I was asking.
But at least you got in a Justice League issue. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was pretty chuffed for that.
That makes you JLI royalty, I think, by definition. I think you get a...
I don't think that we have royalty. Well, we have royalty in the UK. I guess we still have that. But it was in France, and they got rid of all of theirs.
Oh, well, okay, fair. But eventually, Justice League Europe's going to be in a castle somewhere. So, I mean, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I have to tell my super quick Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story, since you brought it up. I started buying Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles over here from the comic shop. And it was, they were still on issue 5 at that point. So they hadn't broken through. There was no cartoon, any of that. And my father thought the name was just hysterical. He just thought that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was the silliest name he'd ever heard ever, and just thought it was a riot. And then he worked in television stations. And a few years later, he's at one of these big hoo-ha TV meetings with, you know, all these national salespeople, and they're doing the big presentation for upcoming shows in the fall. And they run a thing about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And everyone in the room was like, that sounds stupid. So he recognized it, obviously, for me, and realized, wait a minute, that's going to be a thing, and knew it was going to be big, and made sure to, however you navigate all that in TV management, to his advantage, and there you go. So my love of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles apparently helped my dad's business in some way, shape, or form. So there we go.
Now, your dad works in TV. That mm-hmm. might have been a channel I might have seen when I was in vacationing in Florida at some point. So circle of life, man. Circle of life. Or Ooze, one of the two.
It's funny how this show sort of circles around. Like I several months back, and this is irrelevant to what we're talking about today, I had a guest on from Japan, which was amazing. You know, I finally got someone from Asia. We had a great talk. Turns out he grew up right around the corner from my house. So, you know, it's such a crazy small world.
Yes, it really is. Everyone's connected in ways that you don't quite see it. It's really quite a strange thing.
And pulling back the curtain, we're actually having to record this episode a little bit early because Doug is going to be in my home state by the time this thing probably comes out. And hopefully he's not going to be standing at the foot of my bed with glowing eyes, I'm hoping.
You don't know. I wouldn't put it past me.
All right, folks, we are going to talk about Justice League Europe number 31, published by DC Comics, cover dated October 1991, on the shelves September 3rd, 1991. The cover price is $1 for shiny quarters. The cover is by Derek Robertson and John Beatty. Regardless of what it says in the letters page, it is not drawn by Chris Sprouse. It is drawn by Derek Robertson and John Beatty. You want to describe the cover to us?
Yeah, it's our heroes. Well, not all of them. Strangely, Captain Atom and Silver Sorceress are not present, but they're all standing there outside the embassy carrying suitcases. Apart from Blue Jay, his hands are too small to carry suitcases because he's shrunk down. However, they're all leaving, their heads are down, and they're looking very sad. At the front is Power Girl, and clearly in her gold and white, not gold and silver, costume, with Stinky the Cat ahead of her, and she's carrying a teddy bear on her hip. Behind her are Ralph, but not Sue, so I don't know where she's got to, Wally, the floating head of Rex, i.e. Metamorpho. Sorry, do we need to sing that now? I don't know if that's mandatory. Crimson Fox and Dimitri Rocket Red. And above the logo, no trade dressing, not for War of the Gods crossover Armageddon 2001. No, it says the word evicted.
So, I love this cover. Derek Robertson has done an amazing job illustrating this. They look so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it, and even Dimitri's shoulders, he's in a battle suit, and he looks like his shoulders are round, and they're sagging, as if, you know, he's just, you know, told the worst news of his life. Possibly has been. It looks fantastic.
His head's tilted down. Yeah, I mean, think about it. He just lost a home for his wife and children.
Yeah, I can't help but think that the cover was perhaps a change at the last minute, because... obviously, they've got the names mixed up in the letter column. And because Rex just looks like he's a floating head, as if they forgot to put him in the rest of it, like they hadn't given the instructions to the artists.
Mm.
And, of course, there's no Captain Atom, for reasons I can't fathom.
Well, the Captain Atom thing, obviously, we can figure that one out. Rex, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he's added or not. You're right. His head is just sort of peeking up over Ralph. You might see a little bit of his hand under Kara's shoulder, in Kara's armpit area there. I'm not sure if that's Ralph or Rex. It looks like Rex, based based on the coloring. But either way, I see what you mean about Rex. But I don't know. Another thing to say, too, is this cover never happens in the issue. You know, this is ideally what's going on with the Justice League, because at the very end is where this happens. And we don't actually see them leading the embassy in this issue.
If I didn't know any better, I'd have thought this was the cover for the next issue.
Hmm.
And it was out of sequence.
I suppose that's possible. I'm not sure. Either way, I do love it. I think it's beautiful.
It's fantastic. It's wonderful.
And Kara and Ralph especially just sell it. Like, Kara looks sad. The fact that it's silly, but the fact that they put the teddy bear under her arm, it just speaks volumes. You know, it shows, A, that she's got a softer side, and B, she's taking her beloved possessions away. You know, and Stinky the Cat's looking it up, her confused, like, hey, where are we going? I don't understand. This is my home.
Well, Stinky the Cat has an emotional face. How does that happen?
Right.
Unless you've got great art. I mean, it really is. I feel sad for every single person. Even the teddy bear looks sad.
Well, Ralph is the other one that just, because it is not only does he look sad, his head is just tilted as if he's looking back over his shoulder to say, you know, there goes my home. I mean, it's really well done.
Yeah, it is really good. And the thing about the teddy bear is my daughter, I have twins, one of them is called Kara with a K.
Just
to remind everyone. She thinks she's named after Supergirl. She's not. She's named after Power Girl. Because she has a temper on her. She won't listen to this. And she would, honestly, first thing, I'm taking my teddy bear, or in her case, Tigger. And she's turning 12, and she's asking me about, can I take Tigger on vacation? No, you cannot, because if you lose him, we will never hear the end of it.
Oh, I have two kids. I've been through that. I tried to name my daughter Kara. My wife wouldn't have it, though.
See, this is what happens when you've got a geeky wife. We went through a huge list of names, and Kara was number one that managed to get through. I tried to get through Barbara, but that wasn't happening. Then I wanted to go for Huntress with Helena, and that wasn't allowed. And eventually we went with Megan, as in the Miss Martian from Young Justice TV series. And my wife and I used to watch that. And she says, yeah, we'll go with Megan.
That's wonderful. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Other parents get out all those baby name books? No. Just get out who's who.
Right.
In my case, it was the DC Encyclopedia. But it would have been who's who if I could have got all the issues out.
That's my advice to people.
Yeah.
So two more things about this cover. Some online sources credit this issue cover as a homage to X-Men number 138, which is that famous issue when Cyclops leaves the team and he's walking away with a duffel bag over his shoulder and the team's behind him, and they show like the surprint of all the covers of X-Men. But, you know, because if you look at Ralph is carrying a duffel bag. But that's where the similarity ends as far as I'm concerned. I don't see the connection other, again, than Ralph carrying a duffel bag over his shoulder.
Yeah, first of all, there's no teddy bear, so let's just rule that out. And second of all, it's just one guy walking away when everyone else is looking at him looking for a loan. That's a stretch.
Yeah.
You might say it's the same sort of idea, but, you know, it's not really.
Yeah. Now, more importantly, I found a Heritage Auction House, which is like an auctioneer kind of site. They sell a lot of high-end stuff. This particular cover, the original cover by Derek Robinson and John Beatty, sold 2 years ago for $2,000. So, wow.
Wow.
Good for Justice League Europe. Good for them.
That's great. I mean, I don't have $2,000, and I'd love to have had it, but yeah. It's a fantastic cover. It just looks really, really good.
Well, let's get into this thing. Plot and breakdowns by Keith Giffen. Script by Gerard Jones. Penciler is Derek Robertson. Inker is John Beatty. Letter is Willie Schubert. Colorist is Gene D'Angelo. Assistant editor is Kevin Dooley. And editor is Andy Helfer. It is Breakdowns Part 6. The issue itself is called Things Fall Apart. You want to start us off, Doug?
Yeah, well, strap in, folks, because this is going to be long. We start at night with Captain Atom flying over the JLE London Embassy. And we know it's London because the cars are driving the left, which is a nice touch. However, this isn't your usual arrival by the captain. He's shown in shadow or black lit because this is, of course, evil Captain Monarch. He creeps through the building and opens the bedroom door of a sleeping Catherine Colbert. She wakes up in fear as Cap is standing at the door with glowing hands, which is always a bad sign. This is it, folks. Captain Atom is finally snapped and is only a suit of armour away from being Monarch. With an evil grin, Cap fires at Catherine. Towering above her, Catherine prepares for death. Suddenly she wakes up, and this is all a nightmare, but we leave her lying alone in bed, crying. So now it's morning, and then it seems it's actual morning, as in when somebody dies, as the collective JLE heroes are standing around in the embassy discussing how Captain Atom has died. Wait a minute, he's died? Is this one of those Anakin Skywalker died but really Darth Vader things? Rex decides it's this time to mention he should be the new team leader. This does not go down well. But no time to chat, as Jean is called, and he needs the JLEs to help with all their heavy hitters. Now, as far as I remember, that never happened before. It's normally JLA that came to help out the JLE. Anyway, they point out that Kara isn't available due to her being in another crossover event, or something along those lines. So much for her being on the cover, she's not even in the issue. We then cut to space. I mean, goodness me, jumping from round here. And now we're on a planet under attack. A Kahund outpost is being destroyed by a no longer small and frozen Despero, who is under the mind control of two other aliens. However, these aliens are newbies in the whole mind-controlling game, and don't see a Kahund ship creeping up behind them and blowing them out of the sky, freeing Despero's mind. He stops fighting the Kahuns, screams, "Justice League!" and sets off to get his revenge. Phew. Right, now, where are we? Yeah, now we jump to join the JLA, who, unlike the JLE, actually have a shuttle. Probably because the JLE don't need one thanks to excellent European cross-border public transport. It also means that they avoid getting stuck in the European summer air traffic control strikes, which happen every year. Fire and Ice have sent a code A distress signal, and now Guy, Beetle and Wally and John are in the shuttle with the strongest force they can muster, and as they approach the mountains, Beetle realises everything, including the land, has been turned to wood. They then see that Ice and Fire in a bit of a pickle. The man with impressive hair holds Ice aloft while Fire is on her hands and knees in obvious pain. Behind them, there are two more long-haired men, one of which seems to have an old-style hammer and has lost his shirt, but is wearing a cape.
All right, I'll take it from here. So it is revealed these men beating up Fire and Ice are the Norse gods of old. We're talking Thor, Loki, and Baldur. And no, I don't mean the Marvel Comics versions, but the ones based, in theory, more on the original mythology. So Guy Gardner, Martian Manhunter, Flash, and Rocket Red come pouring out of the shuttle to defend their teammates. And in case you haven't figured it out, this is where the War of the Gods crossover comes in. Flash finds out the hard way that Baldur's blade is swifter than any mortal, while Martian Manhunter reels from Thor's hammer. Loki gets the upper hand by using his magic to transform the entire team into living trees. The old gods leave to handle other matters, and with their departure, the magic begins to fade. The Leaguers discover that they were not in fact transformed, but simply encased in an outer wooden shell. So our heroes free themselves, and Ice is relieved that her people are now safe. Back at the London Embassy, Rex and Wally lament that this misadventure with the Norse gods makes no sense, and quite frankly, I'm inclined to agree with them.
Me too.
Upstairs, Catherine Colbert thanks Inspector Camus for his help exposing the UN liaison Heimlich, and it seems Camus's relationship with the League is finally starting to take a turn for the positive, when the other shoe drops. Catherine receives an urgent call from the United Nations. While the League heroes are debating who should be the new team leader, Catherine Colbert announces that there is no need. The United Nations has just revoked the JLI charter. There no longer is a Justice League Europe. Da-da-da! Next issue, bye-bye League! Wow. All right, Doug, so what do you think of this issue, man?
Well, it makes a bit more sense now you've told me which order I should have read it in. As I said, I got it mail delivered. So I saw Marvigan 2001 and went, oh, that's a big book. I'll leave that to the end. And I started reading this one well before I got to that one. And I genuinely thought Cap Atom was going to be monarch. Absolutely convinced. I thought this was the convincing part. Everyone knows he was now evil. And that whole thing about the fake out, well, he was now dead and now he's monarch and Darth Vader type. Honestly thought that was the case. I really did. So it's quite weird. And that's in the first three pages. Sorry, not the first three pages, first six pages, because we have the whole sequence where they're talking about it. So I was like completely at sea as to where I was supposed to be in the story in this one. So that threw me quite a bit.
It would have been helpful if they had a note at the beginning saying, before, you know, like all the times they'll do in comments, before reading this issue, read Armageddon 2001 issue 2. And by the way, also read Justice League Europe annual number 2.
Yeah, I don't think they did. There's nothing in it. No. There's nothing in it to give you a heads up. It's just like, tough. It's almost as if they didn't get the memo.
It does say, when they say Captain Atom's dead, they say, see Armageddon 2001 issue 2. You do get that note on page 4, but it'd help if it said before you read this, it would, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and I genuinely wonder if there was a lot of changes at the last minute. I mean, we all know the story about how Monarch and Hawk and Captain Atom all got switched around, but I do wonder if this book was slightly impacted by that because they didn't actually tell him to the last minute.
Well, you know, and this is one of the books that was probably impacted the most because, you know, the Captain Atom book itself was canceled. So those guys knew going in what was going to happen. The book is over. So it wasn't going to impact them going on. This book, though, had Captain Atom, you know, essentially as the lead or one of the major leads of the book. So, yeah, it had to be impacted. And clearly the writers knew something was going to happen because they've written him out of the book and they've written that nightmare scene. So I actually reached out to Derek Robertson and asked him. I said, you know, hey, when you drew these gorgeous pages for Justice League Europe number 31, were you told that Captain Atom would be revealed as Monarch in Armageddon 2001 before the switch to Hawk? So Derek was kind enough to write back on Twitter, and Derek wrote, I was told to make him look evil as it was a nightmare, but did not know about the larger plans. So clearly, some amount of that got to the writing team because they knew they were writing Captain Atom of the book. Whether they knew Captain Atom was going to be evil, I suspect that's what they thought going into this. Because certainly, if you look at those pages, it was written as if, you know, the script at least was written in such a way that I would think they expected Captain Atom to be evil. Because I mean, why else would he be threatening Catherine? You know, because he died? No, because he's evil. So I suspect what happened was they were told he was going to be Captain Atom. They wrote their script. You know, they told Derek make him look evil. So they did this. They write the script, and then the last minute when they did the switcheroo, they probably had to change the word balloons. Like on page 4, when everyone's lamenting Captain Atom's dead, I imagine it was either, like you suggested, the original script was going to have of Armageddon was going to have Captain Atom quote unquote dead and becomes Monarch, or there was word balloons here like, I can't believe he's evil now. I can't believe Captain Atom has become Monarch. Either way, you wouldn't have to change the art. You'd only have to change the script.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just talking about the script, there's the first 3 pages are wordless. There's nothing. It's just completely conveyed in the art. And to be honest, that is a very evil-looking smile at the bottom page, too. That is fantastically evil. The closest thing I've ever seen anything to it is maybe Kid Miracle Man.
Yeah.
And it just sings about how scary that moment is. So the fact there's no script at all, and it's all conveyed to the art, I think is an astounding piece of work.
Yeah, and just to clarify what Doug's saying, I mean, there's literally there's no word balloons, there's no caption
boxes. Sound effects, nothing.
There's nothing for the first 3 pages, which makes sense because it's a nightmare. And yeah, it's all in Derek and John Beatty's art, and it's stunning. Your Kid Miracle Man analogy is perfect. I mean, that is exactly how terrifying he looks. I mean, if anyone ever read those issues by Alan Moore, you know exactly what we're talking about. And Catherine's emotion when she wakes up is so moving. Like she jumps up out of bed and she's just bawling. And there's a panel, and if you read it in by panel mode, it's even more effective. There's a panel where she's just sitting there in silhouette, basically rocking herself, crying. And it's really upsetting. And again, if you put yourself in the mindset that Captain Atom has just been revealed to be turning into the Monarch and is evil, these pages are great and they're incredibly powerful. But unfortunately, with the switcheroo, it's just like, why is Catherine dreaming he's going to kill her? That's weird.
Yeah. It was really weird. But again, I read it first time around. I was right. It was Captain Atom because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know they changed. I'd worked out the clues that had been left scattered across the Armageddon 2001 series. I mean, I do wonder if maybe there was a bit of changing in the art. They had to make it a little less violent, but I don't know. I think they probably just left it as much as well because it does look fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any change. I don't see anything in the art that looks like it was patched. I think the only thing that was patched was the script because this, I mean, everything here looks dead on, like, you know, or it doesn't look like it's been changed to me. I don't see any sort of fill-ins. God, his glowing red hand when he's going to blast her. Again, so much fantastic work.
That's the first 3 pages.
Right.
You know, and then we jump into the whole discussion. And you're thrown for the loop, and you're getting told all this other stuff about John needs this other team, and Kara's disappeared, and we're going, well, where's she? Because that's the other thing. I wasn't reading War of the Gods. I think I got issue 1 because I loved the cover, and I don't think I've read War of the Gods, which maybe I should have told you before I did this podcast.
That's right. I haven't read it since it was initially published. I did some referencing as I read this issue, which I'll get into in a minute. It does give you, again, another footnote. When they say Kara's not here, they say see War of the Gods number 1. Which is helpful. Again, might have been better at the beginning of the issue. Read this before you come here, but...
Yeah, and it might have been helpful if, for instance, they had not stuck her on the front cover.
Right.
To further confuse me.
So we have, and unfortunately, the confusion's not done yet with the crossovers. We're going to have more of that in a minute. But again, I just want to talk about the art for a second. There is, I just noted, literally while we're talking, on page 5, there's this great shot where they're talking to Jean about Kara not being there and everything. And I didn't even notice till right now, Ralph is standing there with Sue and Catherine at the monitor duty, but his head's in the other room. Like, he has actually stretched his head around to go talk to Flash and Crimson Fox, which is hysterical.
Especially the fact, I think he's excited that the JLE have finally been called to help the JLA. Because normally it was the other way around.
Well, he's probably also excited. They don't say it in here, but he's back on the team. Because, you know, as
of course,
a moment ago, he had been fired. And now that Heimlich's been revealed in the issue we just covered, he's back on the team.
Of course, I hadn't clicked on that. I thought he was just hanging around, nothing better to do. But yeah, you're right, he's back on the team.
They could have mentioned that in the script as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they could have mentioned in the script.
And I don't mean to be critical. I this show is all about me finding my joy and being happy. And so I don't mean to sound critical, but they're... This issue's got a few problems, and maybe it's the fact that it's thrown in the middle of a bunch of crossovers. That had to be hard for the creative team.
It's in three crossovers. It's in Breakdowns, it's in War of the Gods, and it's in Armageddon 2001. You know, that's not easy.
It's not fair to the creative team to have to patch a story through that, certainly.
So, I mean, and after that, we've got another big jump, which is off to space, which was, again, quite jarring for me. I mean, it looks fantastic. Despero looks, and I hope I pronounced it correctly. I think I have.
Well, I'm certainly not the person to ask.
I know that. Don't worry about that. He has been in Flash season 9, and I really should have paid attention. You know, this is a bit like the bit of when Doomsday was coming out, and we just get it's all set up. There's no payoff for this section at all in this comic at all. It's just pure Despero's coming. That's all you get told, and off you go.
Well,
it's odd.
I'm okay with that because they've been doing this for a while now. I mean, this is the third or the fourth interstitial where they've been building this. Manga Khan had a weapon, and you know he was offering it to these same aliens, these horse faced, you know, Nexus looking aliens. And then he offers it to them, and then they buy it, and so this is them trying it out. So I'm okay with it, because it's a tease, and it's been going through many issues, and it's obviously building. So actually, I think it's really well done, and you're just horribly wrong.
Goodness me, I can't believe I'm going to have to admit that.
That, and we get to see Derek Robertson, you know, demonstrating how he picked up Adam Hughes' great new redesign for Despero and just makes it sing. He does a great job with it here.
What sells that is not just Despero, it's the face of the Cahoons. And I know I'm murdering that pronunciation, but I just have to, just in case I say something I shouldn't.
Right.
If I mispronounce it. The face, I mean, because they never look scared. They always look like, you know, I think the best example I can think of is the Sontarans in Doctor Who. They just, we're all going to fight and all the rest of it. These guys look genuinely scared.
Yeah.
Which you never really see. And that's conveyed in one face. There's not two faces, just one face of abject terror. So, I mean, kudos to the art for that.
Yeah. So good. So stinking good. And I have to admit, I am a little embarrassed because I was doing my best to guess where the storyline was going. Because, again, I haven't reread everything. And I was guessing that Manga Khan was going, the thing he was selling, this, you know, machine of destruction that he was selling to the aliens, I thought it was going to be either Lobo, like he had somehow captured Lobo, it was selling them to Lobo, or Starro, because, you know, Justice League Europe had given him Starro.
Yeah.
But now I'm sitting here going, I mean, I can't promise this, but didn't the Justice League America, I'm pretty sure they gave Manga Khan's Despero. I'm pretty sure.
They did.
Yeah. And
yeah, so that's two major villains they've just given away as if they were sweeties.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Take this guy. Well, actually, maybe not sweetie, because I think they were shrunk down and frozen in both cases and spent time with Soleil. Yeah, we can't be bothered dealing with this man who tried to completely destroy our planet and remake it. Let's give you these.
Right.
Excellent idea. That's never going to backfire.
And Michael Khan has proven himself so trustful in the past. So I should have seen it coming. And I don't know why I thought it was Lobo, other than I know Lobo shows up in Breakdowns. But Starro or Despero would have been a good call. Yeah.
Do you know what would have been even better if they put Starro in Despero's head? That would have been...
Oh,
that would be spot on.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been fantastic. And I think for me, that part, that entire section could have been anywhere in the book. It could have been moved to the end. It could have moved to the beginning. It could be put after the letters page, and it would still have worked.
Yeah.
This is why I feel this entire issue is a bit, maybe this could be in another book here. This could be another book there. And it could all have been swapped around. So I'd have maybe had the order a bit different.
Well, speaking of things appearing in other books, why don't you talk about the big fight with the Norse gods? And then I'll explain something that I didn't even know until I accidentally stumbled across it.
Well, the first thing I want to say is the shuttle looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not an easy thing to draw. So that's good. And if I didn't know any better, I would think that that is actually Kevin Maguire doing the art of Beetle's face as he looks out the window.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
It's obviously not a Maguire face, but it's of that style. So the fact that Derek Robertson can do that just speaks volumes. And there's a lot of use of negative space with the shuttle as it flies over the wooden mountains. So I mean, all in all, I love it. So I just wanted to mention particularly that piece of the art. But then after that, it's basically a slugfest with the, at the time, I had no idea who these people were. So I'm going, well, why's a guy got a hammer? Ah, oh, can't be Thor. Turns out it's Thor. Why are they all turning to it? Oh, Loki. All right, it's Loki. So to me, when not reading War of the Gods, I had no idea why Fire and Ice were even there. And I actually went back to my JLA issue to say, oh, what? No idea.
All right, so I'll explain what I can tell you here is, first of all, you read the bit where they fight the Norse gods, right? And it's, you know, it's kind of a fun battle, but then it's over and the Norse gods just leave, right? They just in the middle of the fight, they've turned the Leaguers into wood and they just wander off. And later on, when Wally and Rex lament that the Norse gods issue, part of the issue made no sense, I mean, I completely agree. It felt incredibly shoehorned as like a, what they'd call nowadays a side quest, right?
Yes.
And it's a couple of pages of a fight, and then they, again, the bad guys don't get beaten, they're just gone. So it's very strange. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, gorgeous pages, but the story itself just doesn't make sense. Then I was reading on the internet, because, you know, the internet's always right, and it says that this issue takes place during War of the Gods issue number 2. I'm like, during? That's kind of very specific. That's weird. So I went ahead and got on the DC app, and I went through to War of the Gods number 2, and guess what? We're reading half of a story, is what it turns out.
Oh, no.
So if you read War of the Gods issue number 2, you get a whole bunch of Justice League International stuff. You get the whole lead up of Ice trudging through the mountains, trying to find her people. She stumbles across this forest and it turns out she finds her people, which includes her father. They've all been transformed into living trees. Then she stumbles upon Thor and Baldur and Loki who attack Ice, and Fire shows up as well. So Fire and Ice are there together. We get this whole bit with Loki trying to summon Surtur from Valhalla to, you know, start off Ragnarok. He wants to restart the world. But when you see the Justice Society, who, by the way, at this point in 1991, had been missing for many, many years. They've been trapped in Valhalla since the crisis. But you get to see all that. Then, again, Loki knocks out Fire and Ice, and that scene ends in War of the Gods number 2, which then leads us right up to Justice League Europe number 31, when our heroes come upon them. So this story ends, right, where they're trapped in the wood in Justice League Europe. They're trapped in the wood and whatever. Well, if you go back to War of the Gods number 2, you also get more of the story. So after they've escaped from the wood, the JLI hang around, and they actually search for the Norse gods. They continue to search for them. They're gone, though, because the Norse gods have gone off to do something else with War of the Gods. And then Ice has this really nice, tearful farewell with her father. So you get a lot more of the story. And also in the back, by the way, of War of the Gods number 2, there's this really great pinup by Chris Sprouse of Ice, Fire, and Power Girl, which looks great. So if you read War of the Gods number 2, you really get a much more well-rounded experience of this issue. It really does make a lot more sense. It tells a more complete story. You don't feel like you're reading half a story. Where my criticism, you know, and I get it, crossovers happen, right? I get it. That is not my criticism that crossovers happen. My criticism is that there is nothing in Justice League Europe 31, first of all, in the scripting, it could have been handled differently, and there's nothing in there that tells you to go read War of the Gods number 2. Now, I've looked in the digital version, and I've looked in the hard copy. There's not, and the letters page, there's nothing anywhere in this comic that tells you to go read War of the Gods number 2 to get the complete story.
And if they told me that at the time, I might have bought it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, DC. You lost a sale in 1991. Who's laughing now?
So, folks, if you're reading along with the show, I highly recommend you go find your copy of War of the Gods number 2, or if you have the DC app, it's out there on there, and read War of the Gods number 2, or at least the Justice League International interstitial moments.
Yeah, well, hang on a second. Did you say Chris Sprouse has got a pinup in that War of the Gods 2?
He does.
Chris Sprouse, who was supposedly, according to the letter column, the cover artist for this issue. Would that pinup have worked for this issue?
It was Power Girl, Fire and Ice.
Power Girl's not in the issue at all, so, and she's on this cover anyway, so that doesn't make any difference.
Well, if you want to sell some books, let's face it, put Power Girl on the front, right? Especially drawn by Derek Robertson or Chris Sprouse, either way.
Yeah, too right, yeah.
Interesting, I hadn't thought about that. I suppose it could have been. That would be interesting.
Yeah. You see, this entire issue just feels like it's, let's get everything out of the way. Let's just, we want to get on with our story. but we'll need to, oh, we need to include War of the Gods. Oh, we'll need to include Armageddon 2001. We'll just piecemeal this all together, stick them all in whatever order, doesn't really matter, and get out of the way so then we can get on to breakdowns going forward. That's what this whole issue feels like. Doesn't mean it's not been well done. It just feels like that's been editorially mandated in some respect.
It could very well be. And this issue is sort of a turning point because, you know, last part that we just covered a few minutes ago was Breakdowns Part 5 in Justice League America. And that was a big turning point for Breakdowns. I mean, a lot of stuff got resolved in that story, a whole bunch. It almost felt like the story was over at that point. And this issue starts us on a different path. So if you think about Breakdowns in like maybe a three-act structure, you know, and it's 15 parts, so break it into equal parts, you know, parts 1 through 5 could be considered act 1. In here, we're beginning act 2, so this issue is a bit of a transition. And now I don't know if the next break is between 10 and 11. I have no idea. I haven't read ahead. But again, in 5-issue chunks, that makes sense. So this could be, you know, starting to set the table for the second act, and yet you're right. They've got all this editorially mandated stuff.
This almost sounds like you've been researching this.
I do spend a lot of time thinking about this, shockingly.
Really? Really? I'm mightily impressed that you've thought of that, because I never thought of breaking it up into those sections. So and it makes a lot of sense. It really does. So here you go, Shag. I'm going to say it. You were right.
Wow. I don't hear that very often. Certainly not.
I know. I've not heard it in 7 years. Well, it's your 7 years, one year for me.
Right. Well, and another thing about this book, too, is it does feel like we're starting to see differences again between the Justice League America book and the Justice League Europe book. Because, like, Breakdowns Part 1 and 2 were just like one seamless story. You know, you read those two together, they look like, read like one story. But the rest of the parts of Breakdown, I do feel like we're starting to see more individuality in the books. Like, you know, the Justice League America issues seem to focus on the Justice League America characters mostly. The Justice League Europe issues seem to focus mainly on the Justice League Europe characters, especially this one's almost exclusively Justice League Europe characters. So, well,
you know, John, Guy, Fire, and Ice all turning up.
That's fair. But, you know, it the whole beginning is Justice League Europe. The whole end is Justice League Europe. So you get a little bit of the team together, but really, this is more of a Justice League Europe story. So I feel like, well, Breakdowns is going on, they are trying to maintain their own identities. And I do wonder about the differences in the creative teams. Because, you know, you've got Giffen and DeMatteis in Justice League America. You've got Giffen and the scripter here on Justice League Europe. And that scripter is going to eventually take over Justice League Europe. So I wonder if they were starting to handle more and more of the duties. That is pure speculation. I have no idea. Yeah. But it does feel like the books have separate identities. And I wonder if that was because of where they're moving towards of them leaving the books.
I can see where you're coming from in that. I know that Europe certainly has a different identity going forward. I remember that. You asked ages ago, in the lead up to Breakdowns, and you started warning everybody that not everybody likes it. Mm-hmm. And I stupidly stuck my hand above the parapet, not my head, I'm not that stupid, put my hand above the parapet and said, yeah, I didn't like it. And this is one of the books that I didn't particularly like. Mm-hmm. It looked great, but I just felt it was all over the place as to what it was trying to convey. And I think it soured me for the rest of the series, the rest of the Breakdowns. I think it really, I remember thinking at the time, thinking, huh, that wasn't very good. And it went on from there. And I don't know. I don't know if it's just me. And I admit, having read the other issues leading up to this recently as part of my read-through, as listening to your podcast over the last 6-7 months, I have learned to like Breakdowns more than I remember it. But at the same time, I'm still sitting there going, this one just doesn't sit well.
Well, let's talk about that then, because yeah, every episode now we ask, does this Breakdowns issue did we enjoy it, or does it attribute towards that reputation of Breakdowns not being that great? And again, this is part 6. For the first 5 parts, I've really enjoyed Breakdowns. I mean, I really thought it was great, really wonderful storytelling. And I hate saying this, because you guys know I love Justice League. I've been covering this thing for 7 years. This is one of the few comics in the Justice League run that I didn't enjoy. Artistically, I did. The art's freaking gorgeous. The storytelling's great. The panel design, all of it is a beautiful book. The story was just a mess. And again, I don't know if that is, as you said, you know, editorially where the problem is, because they had to do Breakdowns, Armageddon 2001, and War of the Gods, or it's something other part of the structure, but I didn't enjoy this. And I feel bad because the last issue I said this about that I didn't really enjoy all that much was Justice League Europe Annual Number 2, which, by the way, took place immediately before this.
Yeah.
So this is 2 Justice League Europe books in a row, you know, again, in release date order, that I wasn't thrilled with. And I worry about that.
Yeah, but I think both times It was editorial, not interference, but it's like crossing a highway. You've got to watch for the other traffic, you know? And I genuinely feel that's, particularly the annual, I felt was like, they could have done it in one big story, but I think they felt, you know what? We don't care about, you wanted to do this. We're going to do our own thing and we're going to pay lip service to what you need. And we're just going to do all these small stories. And maybe they had to ditch a bigger, longer story because they were up against the deadline because the new changes were coming. This one, again, it's got some great moments in it. I mean, the turning folk into trees for that gag alone is beautiful. It's brilliant because if you've got to sit back to the original Justice League origin story as told, I mean, I'm going to say Justice League 9?
It's 9, you're right, yep.
It's not the first appearance, it's where they go back into the original story. But it also is referenced in Justice League 200, mm-hmm. where they fight the Appalachians?
Something like that.
Appalachians. It's Appalachians, isn't it? I'm sure that's it. That's not going to get me into trouble with anybody.
Right.
So there's all these great parts, that whole nightmare sequence at the beginning, the Despero bit, even though it's teasing and I didn't really like that part, but I can see it's a very good bit in its own parts. It's almost as if they've got all the ingredients together. They've got everything they need to do and they just didn't gel.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is for me.
I can tell you that's a good analogy. Yeah, they had all the great ingredients to bake a great chocolate cake and it just didn't come out right. Yeah. That could be it.
Souffle, maybe.
The souffle fell. I want to mention that part where the Justice League gets turned into trees. Yeah, it goes back to Justice League Europe number 9, Justice League America 200, also in the Secret Origins issue, if that was out at this point. I'm pretty sure it was. But Robinson crushed that man. I mean, you get a full page splash and it is monstrous and scary. And everyone's been turned to wood and they have tree knobby spots and things like that, and it's horrific looking, and it is just wow, he crushed that.
Yeah, now on that front, mm-hmm. is it just me or does Fire look a lot like Wonder Woman?
That's just you.
That's just me. Maybe it's just the way their hair goes when it goes dark, goes brunette rather than green. Maybe that's just me. No, because I keep looking for Wonder Woman to appear in the book at some point because she was on the cover of issue 1, just the same way the Kara was on the cover of this issue. Never see them.
I think we did a full page count and between Just Like Europe number 1 and then some annual somewhere or something like that, I think she got a total of 4 panels team. I think that's hilarious. I think that was the total thing.
Now you're talking about how horrific and scary, and it is. It's really scary, particularly Wally. He looks horrific. But that panel's in, there's a fantastic humor element of it with what John's saying in it.
Yeah, yeah.
which sort of, part of me thinks it wouldn't be if it had not been a JLE book or a Keith Kiffin book, that joke wouldn't have been in there. They'd have just left it there and we'd have gone, oh, it turned into trees again. But the fact that they put the joke in to sort of needle you to say, yeah, we're still funny, even though we're horrific, that's good.
So the word balloon is, as John's turning to what he says, as if once weren't enough, which is great. And it's also, as a famous, as a longtime reader, they don't reference this happened during either, but you can, as you're reading, you go like, oh, I know that. I know what that means. I got that reference, which is clever. Yeah. I'm glad they did that. Yeah, and the facial expressions, by the way, in this thing, you mentioned a couple of them earlier. Like, since we're around here, go back a page from 15 to 14. There's just a panel where Guy, it's the fourth panel, bottom of the page, Guy's screaming because they're turning into wood. He's horrified. It looks great. There's another few pages back where Guy is also screaming because of the mistreatment of ice. I mean, Derek is such a, and you mentioned earlier the facial expressions, he's a master at facial expressions. I mean, yeah. To be so young and so raw at this point, and again, Andy Helfer knew how to find talent. I mean, wow.
He did. I mean, if you look at the artists that have been on both books, like the mainstays, mm-hmm. how they managed to get that run is just with so much change as well.
Yeah.
It's just impressive. Now, I want to say one thing about the art, mm-hmm. particularly. He does good hair.
And
I know that sounds a stupid thing to say, but if you look at Guy's hair, and even, I think it's Loki's hair that's turning him into, the fact that there's actually lines, it's not just a blob of colour. If somebody's gone in it, that's a sign of good art. Because a lot of times, the way the colourists are just told, colour this all in one colour. But that really sticks out, and it shows quality, I would say, of art.
Yeah, well, Fire and Ice as well.
Yeah, but particularly towards the end, when Ice is lamenting and she's the hairs across her face, etc. That is, yeah, you wouldn't normally get that. It's really good.
Maybe not so much Martian Manhunter and Flash and Blue Beetle and Metamorpho's hair. But
No, Shaq. Come on, be fair.
Yes, sir. Well, since we're talking about heads, I do have to mention, and I will paraphrase Secret Wars number 8, that amid the chaos, there comes a costume. This issue, Derek Robertson has been given us as a present. Wally West's Flash costume has caught up with his monthly book. This is the issue where he gets his new costume. They don't make a big deal about it. He's just wearing it. This is the shiny costume that Wally wore in the 90s with the white eye lenses and the lightning belt that comes to a point. So very exciting to see Wally's new look.
I genuinely hadn't noticed that. Well done, you.
Well, there's on page, I don't know, the not number here, page 19, Wally's adjusting his mask at one point. And he's like tugging on his mask. And I looked at that and I thought, huh. And I'm like, wait, he's got his white lenses. When did that happen? I went back and double checked and I checked several issues back. And this is where they show up, this issue. So
wow.
I love this costume. This is my version of Wally's costume. So yes. I was happy to see it.
Yeah. Wally is my Flash. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Barry, but Wally is my Flash. And what they've done to them in between. The anger. It's enough to turn you into Monarch.
Right. All right. One more timeline confusion, by the way. And I can't take credit for this one. This one I stumbled across the internet. There is another timeline confusion here. And again, this is the trouble of juggling all these crossovers, is the timeline doesn't exactly work for this story in DC continuity, because this story takes place quite literally in the middle of War of the Gods number 2. However, we've also got Captain Atom's dead, or is turned into Monarch, or whatever the hell has happened, right? From Armageddon 2000 number 2. Well, the problem there is that War of the Gods number 2 actually takes place before the conclusion of Armageddon 2001 number 2.
Oh my God.
So this issue...
Do I need to get like a timeline? I mean, it's bad enough having to go through all the podcasts and catching up. This is awful. Now I'm going to need a board and string.
It's a little bit of wibbly wobbly timey wimey. So,
oh, I can handle that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, who cares? It's just some fun comics. But
Sorry. Wait a second. You just said, who cares when it comes to DC continuity? Oh, I cannot wait to read the comments.
So I think that's going to wrap up the coverage of the comic itself. Any final thoughts on it real quick?
Well, yeah, I mean, I begrudged paying my, was it $1 for it? This,
yeah.
75 cents, yeah. Because wherever we pay in the UK, because Kara doesn't appear in it. She's on the cover. Nothing. Not even the teddy bear. I mean, come on. Stinky the Cat doesn't show up. And that entire front page doesn't happen in the issue. They don't even leave the building in the issue. They're still there. They just get told you're getting kicked out. Oh, shocking. Shocking.
I've never experienced a situation where the cover represented something that didn't actually happen in the comic. That's crazy.
It's unheard of.
Right. So, sort of, again, at the high level, art is stunning. There's lots, as you said, lots of great moments. It's just, there's too much crossover fatigue going on here for me to really get as much enjoyment out of this issue as I normally would.
I'm of that opinion. And again, I think that might have colored my opinion going forward. And that's maybe why I don't have great memories of Breakdown.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers that this is just, you know, the middle bit where they've got to clear the decks now that the first part's over, get rid of the crossovers, and then I'm hoping Breakdowns is going to get right back to where it was. So we'll find out as we read along. So in the letters page, I do want to mention, and this is the same thing as we mentioned for the JLA issue, but they do have that voting thing where you could cut it out. You could cut out your comic. I wonder how many people cut it out of their comic and vote for your Justice League membership and send it in, which is pretty exciting. And I know I said it a minute ago, but I'll say it again. Blue Devil was right there. What is wrong with you people that you did not vote for Blue Devil? It doesn't make any sense.
I would have voted for Blue Devil, but I'm more annoyed. Where's Firestorm?
Ah.
Firestorm's a natural for this league.
Well, if you had been reading War of the Gods, I did. You would know
once.
That... But true. The Firestorm series was over, and at this point, he had been turned into an elemental, and he was living in space. And at this point, he does come home for War of the Gods for a little bit to deal with the African gods. But he's very much a more almost Vertigo-type character at this point. So yeah, he was not going to fit in with the Justice League.
I do have one question about that, because you've shared the image, which I don't know if you're going to be sharing that with the rest of the world. But is that an asterisk next to Wonder Woman?
It does appear to be so. Hang on, I'm getting out the actual issue.
Or is it just a bad photocopy or photo print?
Oh, it's just a bad...
Because that would be quite funny if there was an asterisk here. We're putting her on the list, but she won't count.
She'll be on the team, but she'll never appear.
She'll never show up.
I must have dropped something on my comic. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. I just laugh. If you look at that list, there's some fantastic names. You go, yeah, I'd like to have them back. I'd like to have them back. And yeah, it's... I don't know if they actually use this, because it doesn't seem to match what actually happened.
Well, you know, you think about it, it could be that this is one of those where they just say, hey, vote, but they already knew who they were going to pick. I mean, who knows? Yeah. But yeah. I will say, many of my all-time favorite DC characters are on this list. Aquaman, Blue Devil, Robin, Flash, you know, Firestorm's not on the list, but Dr. Fate. I mean, it's just so good.
I know. I would like to see a league where you have Dr. Fate, Creeper, Robin, Peacemaker, and Fire and Ice, and Blue Beetle, and Booster Gold, with Blue Devil. That's what I want. That's my team from that lot, because it's absolutely crazy.
That is bonkers.
Yeah, absolute bonkers.
I wonder how many people voted for Blue Jane Silver Sorceress. Oh, well. All right. So now is the moment where we get to nominate the...
One Punch Award.
Whether it be fantastic or shocking, dramatic or funny or awe-inspiring.
Wait a minute.
Yes. What? Yes. No.
Character spotlight, monitor duty. I've got all my stuff. I've even got an in-stock trades ready to go.
I'm sure you do, but I've seen how much you've written in various places in comment threads and things like that. There's no way I'm giving you a chance to do something that lengthy. You'll add like an hour to the show.
I am insulted, sir. 49 minutes at most.
But you are going to get to do a One Punch Award. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, it is. It genuinely is, because I've been thinking about this the whole way through.
So and I got to ask, Doug, what is your favorite moment of the issue or the most powerful moment of the issue?
The most powerful moment of the issue for me is that creepy, creepy Captain Atom smile. It really is. That sends shivers down your spine. Even looking at it now, you know, 30 odd years on, I look at that and go, ugh. So that just... Yeah, that's the most powerful. The funniest is a different one, which is a shame because we're not doing the ba-wa-ha-ha. But there you go.
Well, just out of curiosity, what's the funniest?
My funniest is this happened once with Jean. That's when he turns to wood. That is hilarious.
I think that moment's great. I also love the moment where Rex says, I thought Thor was blonde. I like that quite a bit too. But yeah, there's no doubt about it. The nightmare that Catherine has is absolutely the powerhouse moment, specifically page 2, where she wakes up, Captain Atom standing at the foot of her bed with glowing hands, and those glowing eyes is terrifying. So the them turning to wood, not even the joke, but them turning to wood is probably a close second for me. But yeah, it's Captain Atom being terrifying. So there we go. Congratulations to Monarch, maybe, kind of. You are the winner of the One Punch Award. Please wear it with pride. It is as tangible as our love for that moment. Now, Doug, I need to ask a favor, if you don't mind. Would you mind hanging around here at the London Embassy for a bit? Help the JLE folks pack up their stuff?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm just going to give the Dublin Embassy a shout to see if there's any of the furniture they want. I'm keeping the doilies, mind. And we'll take the rest up to Edinburgh, to the Scottish Embassy, if that's okay. So you get on with it.
If you need help, you could give Martin Gray or Matt Ev a call. They might be able to help you lug this furniture.
Matt Ev certainly could. Yeah, that's a good idea.
He could lift all of it with one finger.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, don't worry, Doug. We will bring you back to the end of the show. And while Doug's taking care of that for us, folks, I'm going to read your listener feedback in a segment called...
Justice Log.
All right, folks, before we get into your feedback, just a little bit of information. First off, I went to Heroes Con in June, and it was amazing. I saw a whole bunch of you folks there, and while I was there, I got a chance to chat with both Kevin Maguire and Joe Rubenstein, which was really a lot of fun. I got to mention the podcast, talked a lot about JLI, just talked about a lot of fun stuff, and it was really, really special, especially to chat with Kevin. I mean, what a nice guy. Also, got a chance to take this amazing photograph with the community of podcast friends that were there, and the photo was taken taken in the style of McGuire's JLI number one cover. So thank you to Ryan Daly, who was the very first guest on this show, for the suggestion and for his wonderful wife for taking the photo. So I'll be sure to include that photo in the gallery so you can see it. It looks awesome. Now, folks, I need you to get out on the social media and remember, tag us at JLI Podcast on Twitter, Just League International Blah Ha Ha Podcast on Facebook. Because as I always say, you know, it's about building the community of JLI fans around the show. And remember, when you're posting your comments, if you are outside of the United States, let me know and I will assign you the appropriate embassy. Now, for the feedback, we're going to be covering comments from our website, email, social media, things like that, just pulling bits and pieces. We're going to be covering the most recent episode featuring Justice League America number 54 with my guest Tim Levine and Justice League Europe number 30 with my guest Dr. Chris Lewis. First up is Jason R. Lady, author of the young adult humorous fantasy adventure novels Monster Problems, Super Problems, and Time Problems. So Jason starts us off by commenting about the cover. You may remember on Justice League America number 54, we talked about how that cover was an homage to John Romita Page of Spider-Man. So Jason chimes in and says, for covers that are homages to interior panels, I best I can come up with is a variant cover to Amazing Spider-Man number 678, which is a tribute to the famous, quote, "Let's face it, Tiger, you've hit the jackpot," end quote, debut panel of Mary Jane. Funny that both the examples are so early in Spider-Man, drawn by John Romita. Rest in peace. Shows how iconic the Lee Romita years of Spidey are. Then Tim Levine chimed in. Remember, he was the guest last episode. And he says, if anyone's wondering, we recorded about a week before John Romita passed away. To me, and probably a whole generation of fans, his Spider-Man will always be the definitive version of Spider-Man. Thank you, Tim, for mentioning that. Yes, well, we recorded that episode about a week before he passed. And so that's why there was obviously no discussion tying that together. So thank you for the clarification, Tim, and thank you, Jason. All right, up next is Rob McCarthy from the Hell on Wheels webcomic. Rob says, this is a representation of Rob's brain on early JLI. Number one, ooh, look, Batman, Dr. Fate, and Captain Marvel in the same team. Neat. Number two, wait, there's no Superman or Wonder Woman. That's wrong. Number three, but Rob, you don't even like Wonder Woman. Number four, that's right, I don't like the Vision either, but he's the Avenger. Number five, Blue Beetle, meh, but Chicago needs superheroes because the Cubs never win the series. Number six, oh God, they mean to use Guy Gardner? Never! Anyway, he goes on with a few more. A lot of fun. Thank you so much, Rob. Then we heard from Bucky749, the American Samurai, who has his own YouTube channel. He says he just read the first issue of Justice League International number 13, where they fight the Suicide Squad. I'll have to listen to the past episode later, but why is Guy Gardner suddenly acting like Mr. Rogers with superpowers? Well, Bucky, yes. As Tim Price chimed in to mention, you do need to read Justice League number 5 for that explanation, which has a little something to do with a famous award we give out each month. Then we heard from Eric Mies. He says, I can think of a few other interior pages that might be iconic enough to inspire homage covers, such as Jack Kirby's Thing in the Rain splash to This Man, This Monster, John Buscema's Even an Android Can Cry Avengers panel, and Paul Smith's Professor Xavier is a Jerk page. I can't recall whether I've seen any covers based on these images, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were. You know, Eric, those are some great examples, and I feel like I've seen some homage covers, or maybe just variant covers or something, but definitely I've seen things along those lines. All right, then we're here from Gus Casals from our Argentina embassy. He has podcasts such as Ian Reads Comics, Alfred Pennyworth Presents, and many more. Gus says, I have to agree that both issues have lovely covers. In a sort of mandala effect, I do not recall the JLE one belonging to this run or to one of the breakdowns issues. Yeah, the mind plays funny tricks, doesn't it, Gus? Then Gus says that he agrees with Tim that Jean does look badass in his confrontation with Heimlich and all the storytelling notes and the credit given to Giffen. Yeah, absolutely, Gus. Thanks so much. Then we heard from Michael Kramer, who says, Breakdowns for me has the same kind of feeling that Flashpoint would have had in 2011. As a story by itself, it's very good, and I'm enjoying it as we go along. But the problem is that the writing is pretty much on the wall that this story is closing up shop before everything changes. Yeah, Michael, as we're hearing from a lot of comments, yeah, people were aware at the time when Breakdowns came out that this was the beginning of the end. So, yeah. Then we heard from Tim Price from the Outcasters, Batman and the Outsiders podcast, and the Batgirl Hunters podcast. He comments on Justice League America number 54. He says, when the plane carrying Captain Atom and Inspector Camus blew up, what about the crew? There are any number of explanations that could have been included, but the story does not address if Cap did or didn't let some people die, innocent or otherwise. Oh, that's a great catch, Tim. I did not think about that. Then he says, regarding Justice League Europe number 30, I shouldn't be biased, but Derek Robertson should have been the artist for JLA. It's the longer-running title, and Derek's art is so much better. I don't know why the assignments went that way. Any insight would be welcome. But that's to say, I'm consistently blown away by his art in this issue, especially the tragic pages 18 and 19. Isis-faced and whispering, Ula, gets me every time. Beautifully done. Yeah, Tim, I mean, that page was just heartbreaking. And then he says, putting on his historian hat, Queen Bee stated that she had the original Jack O'Lantern killed at the end of Justice League Europe number 4, but it was done off-panel. The new Jack appeared in Justice League Europe Annual number 1, and at least one page of the story was devoted to establishing him or replacing the original. Ah, thank you so much, Tim. Yes, I had forgotten. So when they said that this Jack-O-Lantern wasn't the original, I didn't remember the specifics of it. So thank you. As our official historian, we appreciate it. Heard from Josh Romano, who says, as for breakdowns, I think I had mixed feelings about it. It came out when I had more or less walked away from the comics, but I saw the first issue of breakdowns at the Fort Benning PX while I was at basic training and just figured it was the end of an awesome run. Turns out, I was so right. I'm enjoying the coverage of the story, and I like the spotlight on Jack-O-Lantern, a character whose visual I found appealing enough to make a custom figure of, but who was pretty lame in the pages of the comic. Custom Jack-O-Lantern figured. Oh my gosh, Josh, that is so cool. Well, thank you for sharing. Hey, you know, if you got a picture of it, let us know. We'd love to see it. They are from Liz Ann Oswald, who has her own YouTube channel. Liz says, the team going back to Bialya looks cool. And Ted is there wearing the yard sale artist's fake mustache from the New Warriors podcast. then can't wait to hear the next podcast. Well, thank you so much, Liz. And I love the shout out to yard sale artist. That is awesome. They are from Martin Gray from the Scottish Embassy. He does the Two Dangers for a Girl blog. Martin says, I am shocked that Shag insists nothing naughty went on when the door was closed on the office conversation between Fire and the horrible new Justice League administrator. Why else would it be closed? She's doing something very naughty. Turn in that irredeemable title at once. Well, Martin, I'll come back to that in just a second. Then Martin says, the widening gyre, which was a question, that was the name of an issue last month, and we were kind of wondering what it was. He says it's a Yeats reference. You know, things fall apart and the center cannot hold and all that. Well, thank you, Martin. I appreciate you going all literate on us. That's impressive. So regarding Fire and the closed door. So I'm going to let a few other people speak for me, and then I'll share my opinion. So Tim Levine, again, guest last episode, says, I actually agree that nothing naughty happened behind the closed door, although I'm sure there was plenty of seduction and leading him on. Then Symbol Penning from the England Embassy and the Symbol Penning Power Girl blog chimes in and says, in the JLA issue, I really don't like that scene with Fire. I get the implication that she's meant to have seduced Heimlich. Personally, I'd have liked a scene where she uses her charm to bamboozle the guy and get what she wanted that way around. But I guess technically comics code still applies here. Then we heard from Josh Romano, who says, I like to think that Fire stayed PG and she just flirted with him a little, influenced him with the hope that she might pay him more attention in the future. Yeah, so okay, collectively taking all of that, and this is Shag, I think that my opinion is the same in that I think the door was closed, she did a lot of heavy flirting, really let him on, and she uses sex as a tool in her toolkit. She's an incredibly intelligent lady, she knows how voluptuous she knows how to use it. So I don't think she did anything inappropriate. I think she let him on, and just like an idiot guy, he was all wooed and went for it. And now that we know retroactively that he was under the influence of the Queen Bee, maybe he's easily influenced by beautiful women. Either way, I think the whole reason the door was closed is because it's funny. It's hilarious to have the door closed because we don't know what happened and we have a million different things going through our head. And here we sit 30 years later discussing that very thing. So I think it's incredibly effective. I don't think Fire did anything. I mean, the fact is, again, she knows how to operate and she's not going to bring herself down to that kind of level. So, yeah. All right. Up next was Chris Pine. Says, this was a great episode and I really enjoyed the discussion you and your guests had about these issues. The books are still flawed compared to the rest of the Giffen DeMatteis run, but with 30 plus years gone by between readings of breakdowns, I definitely come around to appreciating them more now. All right. Yeah, Chris, I can see where you're coming from and I feel kind of the same way. Ted and Tora both seemed like the audience proxy into the group, and they added a lot of humanity into the team. Ted with his lack of power and humor, Tora with her heart and naivety. So losing them really emphasizes the breakdown of this issue of the Justice League. Yeah, Chris, I agree. I think Ice and Beetle, at the time I probably didn't realize they were the perfect ones to show that. They really are. They're kind of the heart, the emotion, the compassion of the team. They heard from Brett Young from Imagine 8 Design. Brett says, first, let me say that mentioning that your own doily reference made my heart sing. I was walking around in my neighborhood listening with my earbuds in, but I heard it and I pumped my fist in the air like Judd Nelson at the end of The Breakfast Club. Speaking of, check page 16, panel 3. What's that under the plant behind ice? That's a damn doily is what it is. Thank you, Brett. I don't think I did a doily count on this issue, so I'd be interested to hear how we did. Then he says, tough end for Little Mermaid. Clean up on Isle Ula. Guess the Bialya Embassy is serving sushi tonight. Whoa! Chris Lewis chimes in from the England Embassy and also at the guest last episode. Chris says, too soon, Brett, too soon. Yeah, I gotta agree. Wow. Then we heard from Siskoid from the Canadian Embassy. He's part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. He does shows such as FW Team Up, Gimme the Star Trek, and more. Siskoid says, it's easy to forget cover homages to an interior page because it's been used so much as a cover. Yeah, absolutely. That the walking away with the trash can has been used a bunch. And he actually listed out a bunch of them that are used sort of nods to that. So that includes Justice League of America number 224, New Teen Titans number 39, American Flag 38, Manhunter 24, Azrael 29, Hitman number 60, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Back in Black, Starman number 21, Green Lantern 68, Wonder Man number 18, the Titans number 13, and more. And he says, sometimes there's a trash can, sometimes there's not. But there's always costumes and people walking away from them. All right. Well, thank you, Siskoid, for that collection of information. Then we heard from Jimmy McGlinchey from the Irish Embassy. Now, I'm going to try to do this, folks. Just know that Jimmy wrote it this way on purpose. So when I'm slaughtering it, it's half my fault, half his fault. So here we go. Faith in Begorra, tis I, the Irish Academy here, to be sure, here to throw the gift of the gab to the old JLA and JLE from the 40 Shades of the Green Emerald Island, and what's that, Dr. Chris? I don't have to speak like Jack-O-Lantern? Whew, that's a relief, and he drops the faux Irish accent. Oh, Jimmy, you know, these past 7 years, I have loved these jokes, still, to this day, it never gets old. Jimmy says for JLA number 58, he says, one thing that is still a bit unclear is how the Bialyan plots are intertwined. It seems that Jack-O-Lantern number 2 and Suman Harjavati orchestrated Max's shooting to drag the JLI into investigating the Queen Bee. All right, I'm Jimmy, this is Shag. That checks out. Makes sense. However, Ambassador Heimlich appears to be the Queen Bee drone. Okay, so still correct. Checking that out. Then Jimmy postulates, how did the Queen Bee use Max's shooting to try and install her own people in the JLI hierarchy? Huh. All right, Jimmy, you got me there. That does leave me wondering how the Queen Bee capitalized on that so quickly. Now, I suppose she could have had Heimlich in place in the UN already, because she did brainwash a whole bunch of people. But, yeah, she moved pretty quick there, didn't she? I think that's what I'm going to fall back on, is she already had him brainwashed, already had him in place in the UN, and then she just started manipulating other people to make sure they voted for him to get him into that spot. That's what we're going to go with. And then he says, another minor nitpick point, how did the Queen Bee know about the ex-Justice Leaguers being in Bialya, and why did she decide to invite the JLI to get in there to get them? Surely she could have just used the Global Guardians to deal with them. That's a good question. Why did she invite the JLI rather than bringing in the Global Guardians to deal with them? I don't have an answer to that one. Maybe someone at home does. I gotta say, Jimmy, good job with the thought-provoking questions. Then we heard from Doug Adamson from the Scotland Embassy and, of course, a guest on this very episode. Doug says, I do like how both issues are pulling things together, ready to set the table for Jurgens. However, I seem to recall that originally Keith and JM had originally planned to leave by now, and I often wonder if this was the end point that they originally conceived. Had things stopped here, maybe I would have had fonder memories of breakdowns. Maybe, Doug. Then we're from Tim Brennan. He says, great show as per usual, y'all. I've been listening to the podcast since the beginning, and there's always been a great mix of humor, intelligence, and smart analysis. Shag, you do good work. Wow, Tim. You're like my new favorite commenter. Thank you. Tim goes on for 2 points. He says, does anyone know if Volume 3 of the JLI Omnibus is in any kind of development? I would imagine the legal issues around one of the writers creates problems, yet I thought there was a solution where their royalties went to victim advocacy groups. You know, Tim, I have not heard word one about an Omnibus Volume 3. I do know at one point they planned a Breakdowns trade paperback, but that was many, many, many years ago. That's like 7 years ago they were planning it. So it was going to be 2 volumes. So I don't know. And I don't know if there's enough material to merit a large size omnibus. Honestly, if they were to do Giffen and DeMatteis, I guess what they could do would be all the remaining issues that they did, then throw in the 2 miniseries, you know, formerly known as Justice League. And I can't believe it's not the Justice League. Maybe they'll get close to omnibus size. But otherwise, they're just going to bleed into the Dan Jurgens years. And that doesn't make any sense. So or they could throw more quarterlies in, I suppose. Maybe that was how they could do it. But good question. And then Tim says, it's been too many damn years, but I do recall breakdowns being fun, but unfocused. If you have to do an event in comics, there ought to be either a thematic or conceptual hook. Secret Invasion is, who can you trust? That's that narrative. Crisis clears the deck of unwieldy continuity. Civil War creates conflict based on legal, ethical lines. The execution is debatable, but the hook is there. Breakdowns, on the other hand, feels like multiple concepts jammed into one narrative. Giffen, DeMatteis, and company are so talented that they kind of make it work, but it felt like at times a JLI turducken. And I'm curious if time is being kinder to breakdowns. So, Tim, only you can decide here if time is being kinder, but I will tell you thank you for introducing me to the word turducken. I had to Google that to find out what that meant, and now it makes perfect sense. We also heard from Jeff Messer, who does the Issues With interview show. He's been a past guest of the show. Jeff says, bracing for the end of the classic Bwahaha era, but eager to revisit the Can't Believe and Still Not era. And I just completed my collection of the Jurgens and Burchett. What a team. One of issues that follow this. Never read them back in the day, but I'm planning to dive in soon. Awesome, Jeff. Then we heard from M.A. Solko. He caught my Del Tarrant reference, my Blake 7 reference last episode, and he laughed at it. So, hey, you know what? I sincerely appreciate that. I figured it was a pretty small target market. But anyway, he says, I was a huge Global Guardian fan with appearance in Super Friends and DC Comics Presents, dropping when I was 5. The big shock in this JLE hit me more than Max being shot. Yeah, I can get it, M.A. Solko. If you're definitely a Guardians fan, it was a hard issue to get through. All right, I've got a couple of Double Stuff awards to issue, and these go out to folks who went above and beyond to promote the show or perhaps did something incredibly generous. In this case, first one goes out to Diablo Frank, who recently went to Europe, and while he was there, he picked up a copy of Justice League International, which was printed in Danish. So it's a combination of issues 7 and 8 in one package, and he was kind enough to mail that to me. So thank you so much, Diablo Frank. I really appreciate that. It's a real joy to have, and I'm just super excited about it. Then also a Double Stuff award to our buddy Doug Adamson, who recently came to the United States, and while he was here, he was so nice. He mailed me a Justice League Europe t-shirt and a sticker. So that was very kind. And then, unfortunately, he wrapped the whole package up in a terrifying, terrifying image of Captain Atom. Specifically, the image from this issue of Justice League Europe we talked about a little while ago. It's the one where he's standing over Catherine Colbert's bed, and he's got those crazy eyes, and he's just terrifying. And Doug printed this thing out. He cut out all the lines and pasted it on top of this, like, reflective foil. So it genuinely looks like a metallic Captain Atom just smiling the smile of death at me. It is terrifying. And Doug has suggested I put it at the end of my bed at night and wake up to that. That is nightmare fuel. But thank you, Doug, for the kind gifts and the nightmares? I don't know. All right, folks. So this is now the part where we're going to thank everyone who shared the show on their social media timeline. That's Facebook or Twitter. I know it is a long list of names. However, these folks really help support the show. And I really want to keep mentioning them because, you know, this may be the only time these folks are mentioned. And it's important to me that we recognize their contributions because, you know, they are part of our community. Now, I did my best once again to pull all the names that I could. Twitter still acting a bit difficult. So if I missed you, please let me know and I'll be sure to include you next time around. Here's everyone that helped promote the last episode by sharing on Facebook or retweeting on Twitter. Our thanks to Andre TFG, The Bat Pod, Between the Pages Blog, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold Facebook Group, Brent B., Brian Schufo, Changing Shades, Chris Franklin, Chris Lewis, Chris Lydon, Christopher Luke, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Doug Adamson, Dr. Jennifer Schwartz Levine, Dr. Pop Culture Bowling Green State University, The Earth 2 Podcast, Frederico Hernandez, Geek to Me Radio, Gus Casals, Jack Knight, Jason Lady, Jeff Hunter, John Coos, Justice Trek, Justin Steiner, Keechee Baker, Con L, Crazy Joe Adventures, Liz Ann Oswald, Martin Gray, Martin Kogan, Matthew Cody and his Superman Radio Revisited Podcast, Max Romero, Max Traver, Mel Felton, Michael Kramer, Michael Thomas, Mike Dynas, Mo Walker, OG Justice League Unlimited, Patrick's Tactics and Tutorials, Paul Kean, Pragmatic Golem, Prairie Justice, the Greg Saunders Vigilante Podcast, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, Rob Kelly and his For All Mankind Super Friends Podcast and Treasury Cast Accounts, Rolled Spine Podcast, Sean Ross and his Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Sen Goku, Siskoid, Symbol Pending, T. Denton, Tim Price, Trent Lewis, Turbo Comics, Warlord Thanos Podcast, Willie Yarbrough, and Zek Cap Boots. Woof! Well, thank you, all of you, for your support of the JLI Podcast. I sincerely mean it, and your feedback is such a critical part of the show and to this community that we've all built together, and I sincerely appreciate you. And as I said at the top of the show, please consider subscribing to the Once Upon a Geek Podcast and the Justice Society Presents Podcast, because I really want to stay in touch with all of you folks. Our relationship over these past 7 years has really meant a lot to me. So, now, if I've forgotten or missed anyone in the credits earlier, I am terribly terribly sorry, is probably the fault of Tim Levine or Chris Lewis. Just let me know, and I'll be sure to include you in the next episode. So keep those cards and letters coming, folks. Go to our website, which is where the most of the activity is going on. It's just firewaterpodcast.com/JLI, and leave your comments on the show post there. Over on Facebook, you can look up JLI Podcast or Just League International, Blah Ha Ha Podcast. On Twitter, it's JLI Podcast, and the email is JLIPodcast@gmail.com. My thanks again to Tim Levine and Dr. Chris Lewis for appearing in the most recent episode of the show. And thanks to you listeners for such a wonderful collection of feedback. You guys are the best. Now, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we'll see if we can bring our guests from this episode, Devin Clancy and Doug Adamson, together in the same embassy. Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Spanning from the first issue of Who's Who in 1985 all the way through the Loose Leaf Edition.
Including all the updates, the spinoffs, custom Who's Who pages for forgotten characters, and tons of in-depth character spotlights.
Entries span from the golden age of DC
and into the extreme 1990s.
Covering characters such as Superman by Kurt Swan and John Byrne.
The Justice League by Kevin Maguire.
Batman by Dick Giordano.
The New Titans by Tom Grummett.
Wonder Woman by George Perez.
The Legion of Superheroes by Keith Giffen.
The Flash by Carmine Infantino.
Lobo by Simon Bisley.
The All-Star Squadron by Jerry Ordway.
Firestorm by Al Milgram.
Aquaman by Chuck Patton.
So many entries talking about Ian Carcool.
The Forever People again and again and again.
And hundreds and hundreds of other characters found in Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available wherever you find podcasts and at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Nuclear Man, Batman, Hawkman,
2D Man, and Hour Man. Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC Who's Who.
Okay, folks, we're back from break, and yes, it does appear the JLI teleporter has brought both Devin and Doug together for us. Now, first, Devin, my thanks to you for appearing on this episode, man. I'm so glad we got a chance to record together again. It's been a real blast. I really appreciate you being here. So, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find more of you?
Sure. I joined Threads just as a joke to make in this part of the podcast, and then I get there, and you're already there. So, I don't know.
Early adopter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really do much social media or anything like that, but I do have a YouTube channel, which is just under my name, and my wife sends me stuff on Instagram, so I have to be there. I'm at Thelonious16.
Awesome. So I also expect a Blue Sky invitation from you anytime now, by the way. Again, Devin, thank you so much for being here. And I appreciate all the insight you brought to help us navigate that Justice League comic. I'm glad to have you as my co-pilot on that one, buddy.
Yeah, you really did not help me find my joy there at all. So I think you owe me, or I'm just going to be mad for a while or something, or maybe go break something. I don't know.
I'll invite you on my next V podcast. How's that?
Oh, awesome. Another 39 years.
Exactly. Doug, thank you so much for being on.
Hang on. Wait a minute. I'm just measuring this. Nah, it's not going to get through that door. Right. Okay. Sorry. What you need me for?
Thank you so much for being on the show, Doug. I'm so glad we finally got a chance to talk. You know, I've only known you now for however long you've been listening to the show, but your voluminous comments have led me to have a better understanding of who you are and, quite frankly, be terrified. But
yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, why don't you tell the folks at home where they can find more of you?
Where they can find more of me? I don't think anybody does want to find more of me. It's more about how to avoid me. It's a better way to do it. I don't actually have that much of a high profile. I do my Lego shows for charity. I've built Hall of Justice in Lego. If anyone wants to see photos of it, I can share that. So I'm basically on Facebook. You can find me there. And I occasionally post on Twitter. And that's pretty much it. So if you ever are looking for Lego display stuff, Edinbrick, that's the Lego show I run, which raises money for charity, and that's the easiest way to find me, really. Beyond that, I'm pretty low profile these days.
Well, you can always find Doug in our comment sections. Pretty lengthy missives, or you can find him anywhere where the Fire and Water folks are chatting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's between me and Frank sometimes as to who's written the longest comments, I would say.
Well, when Damian Whiter chimes in, he's giving you guys a run for your money as well.
Yeah, we do our best. Somebody's got to have something to read.
There we go. Well, thank you, Doug. Again, I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Of course. And folks, that is going to do it. Now, come back next episode when we cover Justice League America number 56, Justice League Europe number 32, and surprisingly, Green Lantern number 18. Yeah, it's a breakdowns crossover. And we'll have two more guests to help me cover the issues. Who will they be? Come on, folks. You know how this works. You're just going to have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Devin.
And I'm Doug.
And you've been listening to the JLI Podcast.
Want to make something of it?